Hey, welcome to the Film Podcast. I'm Ricardo.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Adam Scott.
And today, we welcome you. It's our 100th episode, so...
Ooh, party cracker, kazoo.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'll add those
is that
in
your,
post. Yeah.
Is that your MC? MC party cracker kazoo? Yeah.
Yes.
And what I'll do... Well, here's the thing. We want to do something different for our 100th episode, and... a little something for you to know us more personally, and, you know.
I feel like we don't open up enough.
Yeah, yeah. And also, if this
is... we're going to open up a lot by just how you breezed or right by that.
Yeah.
If this is your first episode that you're listening to, don't do that. Go listen to another episode.
Don't start with this episode.
But if you've been listening throughout... you know, all our run.
There's going to be a lot of feels in this episode.
Yeah, yeah.
But this might give you context to everything else that's said in every other episode. In many ways, this should have been episode one.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're doing a prequel to episode one. But yeah, so for the listeners that have been listening since the beginning, thank you so much for the support and, you know, following us on Twitter and all that stuff. And if you buy stuff off our Amazon link, thank you for that. And if you're a new listener, hey, welcome. This is what we do. We like to party. So today we did our episode. Our episode theme is really interesting. We figured the best way for you to get to know us better is we picked five movies that relate to our lives, and in which way it's up to each host to pick which way. Mine, I picked like the five movies that represent a time or a place in my life. And then Jenny's, how did you do yours?
I did mine kind of like movies that helped me get through a time in my life or helped me kind of change my life because I watched it at that time kind of thing.
Okay. So it's like do they also represent a
they can describe a part of my life.
Oh, okay,
yes.
Okay. You're using it's like you would use a song to represent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brandon, how did you go about doing this?
I just picked stuff that I look back on and that either defined like a moment in my life or a period of time or a movie that I link to a very specific memory or event.
That's kind of yeah.
Yeah.
You kind of explained it a little better than I did, but that's how I did mine too. Adam,
I think like what Jenny said, like movies that define a moment. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, we'll start with Jenny.
All right.
Whose idea was this, first of all? I think it was your idea, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, kind of. We all came up with it together. I just kind of started.
Not really.
It.
She said, it was hey, all I me. Had an idea.
All me.
Yeah. Don't.
I just didn't know how to do it. I was like, we should talk about ourselves more, but I couldn't figure out how.
Well, that actually, it turned out well because everyone kind of went and did their own thing with their five picks or however many picks you
which
have.
Which kind of explains all of us as well, to be honest.
Yeah, listen, everyone wants to talk about themselves.
Yeah.
But we need some kind of avenue where you're not the asshole talking about yourself.
Yeah.
So this is a great excuse.
Yeah. So, Jenny,
all right,
take
so
it away.
I'll start it off. I saw this movie for the first time when I was in, I think, like middle school. Pretty much everyone should see this movie before they go to high school, I think. Or if they're just starting high school. But it's a great movie to kind of explain, even though it's from the 80s, it kind of explains high school even today. And it really helped me kind of know in advance, like what I need to, like everyone's a little different, but we are all the same. And that whole thing, you know, be friends with everyone kind of thing. And my number five pick is The Breakfast Club.
Nice.
Interesting.
All right.
I think that might be an honorable mention for me. I see exactly where you're going with that. I agree. I had the same thing. Like I watched it all the time in middle school and I was like, okay, I think I'm ready.
Yeah.
I think this movie repairs the damage that Saved by the Bell did.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I had this thing where I kind of had a group, but I also kind of didn't really fit in well with one certain group, and so I in high school I'm talking about and so I kind of like I was in a couple of the smart classes, a couple of the not so smart classes, and so I kind of knew everybody. And not saying I was like popular by any means, but I was
you're
at least
popular.
No, I wasn't popular by any means.
What were the not so smart classes?
Like, well, I was really good at math, but I hated science.
What was science. Remedial? Okay, remedial biology.
I hated science. Yeah, but. And I wasn't in like APs or anything like that. I was just regular, the higher of the regular classes. But so it kind of made me a little bit more well-rounded just because I knew a lot of people. But by no means was I like, you know, the popular kid, the cheerleader that goes with the most popular boy in homecoming and blah, blah, blah. I didn't do that shit, but I at least like was more well-rounded, I think.
Nice.
So did you guys identify with like the archetypes that are laid out in movies like The Breakfast Club, with like the outsider, the jock, the pretty girl?
I felt like I was in the weird no man's land between Judd Nelson's character and Anthony Michael Hall's character.
Okay.
Like a weird combination of the two. It was like I wished I was Judd Nelson, but I was more like Anthony Michael Hall.
Right.
But not quite as geeky as Anthony Michael Hall.
And not quite as dopey as Judd Nelson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like a weird clone.
As philosophical without all the dopiness.
Yeah. Sure.
I feel like I see those movies and I felt like when I went to high school, none of those people were there. Like, at least my experience was that I just never, like, I was friends with people in classes of mine, and some of them were like on a sports team, some of them were, you know, involved in other extracurricular clubs, but like they just never, I never got those like pure like loser characters or like the, you know, just the 100% jock all the way.
See,
I wanted at least one of those.
I have a revision. Actually, I most identified with the camera now that I think about it, because I felt like I saw all of those people all the time. Like, I was never really one of those. Like, I didn't fall in any one of those specific categories, but I saw each one of those clearly at my school.
Okay.
Well, so, I think that is like the easiest way to explain people. But if you look at, and I don't think I'm stepping on anyone's toes, but if you look at like Mean Girls, where it goes through and explains them a little bit more in depth at the lunch table, I think that doesn't necessarily describe every school, but it helps explain like how different groups are today. And so I think back then, not saying that everyone was like that back then, but I think they just kind of easily figured out a way to, but I don't think anybody really fits in with any of those. I don't know. Maybe the jocks, but even like the pretty girls were different than Molly Ringwald in my school, you know?
Well, I thought like I can't remember who it was. Someone said in a thing. Anyway, someone said in a thing that I was reading about how Breakfast Club would be the perfect movie to like remake every 10 years.
Yeah, like just change it a little bit.
Yeah, just a different generation every time, because the inner politics are completely different, but still kind of all the heart is there, all the, you know, same like desires and motivations and stuff. It's just like, for one, it could be a little more diverse than a 1980s white John Hughes movie or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, I just felt, that's a good choice.
It's funny, growing up, like, watching movies about high school and stuff when I was really young, especially like John Hughes movies, I always thought like, man, like, I'm not gonna get laid because I don't have money, you know, because a lot of those movies were status based, like, oh, you don't want to sleep with that chick, she's from the wrong side of the track. And I'm like, well, at least I'll get that chick, because you know, those rich kids don't want to sleep with her. But I thought it was gonna be that, like literally like classes, like, hey bro, your family's in this bracket, so you date these chicks. And I was really confused as a child, so I was like, no, I hope it isn't that way, but it isn't that bad, because I'll at least get, you know, Molly Ringwald,
right?
Molly Ringwald type, you know. So I was pretty happy where I was at. But anyway, so that was your number
five.
What's your
first, I guess,
five? Did you get do five or?
I did five. I mean, I have a couple more than five, but I'll do five. And they're not in any certain order.
Me neither. So
that's my first one.
All right, Brandon.
Okay, so in 1989, my parents sat me down and gave me the talk. Well, yes, I mean, it would be the talk, but not the talk you may be thinking is the talk. They sat me down. They're like, listen, you know, your father and I are You know, I don't remember at all what they said exactly, but they told me they're getting a divorce.
How old are you?
I was 1989. I'd be seven.
Oh, wow.
Seven or eight. I can't remember when it was. But my immediate response was, is this because Dad let me watch Batman? Because my mom didn't want me to see Batman.
Yeah.
It was far too dark, she thought. And I guess it was dark, but it's only like...
The Michael Keaton one?
Yes. Mm-hmm. 1989's Batman. Yeah. But it's only like superficially dark.
Yeah.
Like it's not really dark the way some stuff is dark.
Maybe for a seven-year-old.
Well, and also for its time.
Well, maybe for its time it might be dark.
Yeah.
I mean, now, like, The Dark Knight would be the version of that. I mean, too dark.
Technically, that Batman is darker because he kills people.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. But I was not at the point where I would be arguing the moral complexities of different interpretations of Batman. Does he kill or doesn't he? Which he doesn't, by the way. But, so that movie forever will be in my mind is the thing that I originally thought was the reason my parents got a divorce. Because my dad always wanted me to watch, like, well, he just didn't care. He was like, yeah, I don't know, whatever, it's Batman. It's Batman.
Yeah.
So I could watch Batman. Like, he was the first one. I remember there was a Laserdisc. We used to go to this Laserdisc rental place, Laserland in Denver. And they had a Chinese bootleg import of Pulp Fiction while it was still in the theaters in the U.S. Ooh. Like, they had it for rent.
Really?
Like, this was a weird time. Like, this imported Laserdisc. But at first he was like, well, I just want to show you the first 20 minutes because the dialogue's really good. But then we just watched the whole thing, and it was horrific. And I was, like, probably 13 at the time or 12 or something like that. But that was the kind of guy he was. But anyway, 1989's Batman.
Yeah.
The reason my parents got a divorce.
Can you watch that movie? Without having hard feelings?
I can't watch the movie because I'm not as big a fan of it as I used to be.
Oh, okay.
But not doesn't bring of back the... memories?
No.
Okay.
No.
Like this movie broke up my parents.
No, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Fuck Tim Burton.
Yeah.
It's his fault. All right.
And it's just that one. It's not all the rest of the Batmans.
No, I think by the time Batman Returns came around,
you're like, I'm fine.
I would have been old enough.
Yeah.
I'm curious. What is your guys' like earliest memory? Like how far back can you remember? How old were you?
I can't remember yesterday.
Really?
I remember a tripod falling on me when I was like 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Wow.
Where at the house where I grew up in Florida. But I don't know if I'm conflating that from an actual memory or like a video I saw when I was younger that they had. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know that I remember anything specifically. I just see pictures and videos. And so I'm like, oh, that must have happened. Through. Yeah.
I have very vivid memories of like being 3 years old. Like I could to the point where I would describe things to my mom and she'd be like, oh, yeah, we never took pictures of that. That's weird that you could remember that far. So
it's weird that you can.
Yeah.
And it's not something. And it's not something your mom described to you.
No, not at all. Like it'd be like, hey, remember when I was a kid and this happened? She's like, whoa, that's weird because you were like 3. Like that's
like really
interesting. Like, well, when I get to my pick, I'll explain in detail.
Okay.
But Adam, what? But I was just curious to see how far back you guys could remember.
I don't even know. I feel like I can't remember very far back at all.
I have a really shitty memory too.
Yeah.
Like a really shitty memory.
Like even seeing pictures, I'm like, I don't remember that at all. Like,
I know.
There's pictures of me going like at the Amtrak station picking my grandma up. I'm like, I don't remember that at all. And like, I have like a whole photo album's worth of pictures of them. Like, I don't remember that. Not even a little bit.
I guess the first thing I know that I actually remembered because there are no pictures from it is when I knocked out my 2 front teeth when I was a kid.
How old were you?
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea. Probably like 6 or something like
that. Oh, they were your real teeth.
They're my first teeth.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, your first teeth.
Oh, baby teeth. Okay, yeah.
Big what?
When do you start?
Big girl teeth?
I don't know what I was going to say. I don't know.
But yeah, I had like a chest by my bed that I would have a glass of water on and I went to get a drink and it, no, I'll turn that off. And it, sorry guys. And I just slipped and like my face hit the edge of the chest and just like knocked my 2 front teeth back.
I can think of something that I don't have a picture of that really screwed me up.
Whoa.
I rode a bike without shoes on.
Oh.
And really fucked the bottom of my feet up.
Really?
Like really badly.
Like on a because of the spiky pedals?
I think I crashed.
I
crashed and or didn't stop in time, or I couldn't stop in time because it was the back pedal brakes or something.
Oh yeah.
And then I like my feet yeah. The whole bottom of them were probably, like all bloody.
You probably
I was at my
break,
friend's house
you
too.
You break or something with your feet, and then that's how they got bloody.
Maybe. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I just remember it was my friend's house, and I didn't want to tell my mom.
You're like, just put my socks on. Yeah.
Yeah.
You were like John McClane in Die Hard. You just
oh, I remember another one that was like the next year. That was the earliest one, probably. That I was rollerblading down my hill in front of my house, mm-hmm. and a car was coming, and I was like, I can beat the car, like an idiot.
Wow!
And then I just like somersaulted down the hill, scraped up everything. Like I had a huge bandage on my knee, and you can see pictures of the bandage on my knee, but you can't see the scar.
Really,
it was gross.
That's good.
I was it was like right before this. I was really big into golf when I was in elementary school because we belonged to the country club, and so I had to be into golf.
Charmed
and
charmed.
So we went to this LGPT
LPGA.
Yep.
Ladies Professional yes. Golfers Association. Mm-hmm.
And then I had my golfing outfit and my glove that was covering up my hand that was all messed up, and you can see my knee. Yeah, it was really embarrassing.
That makes sense, though, that the first memory would be something traumatic.
Yeah.
Because it's not, because like when stuff like that happens, it's not that time slows down, it's that you become more aware of things. So time seems to pass slower.
Yeah.
So remembering that makes sense.
Yeah.
Maybe I do remember the tripod falling on me.
Kink. What is, so yours was Batman, right?
1989's Batman.
Adam, what is your first pick?
Okay, so I'm going to go, this is a movie I feel like I've mentioned a couple of times before, but it was like, it's just the perfect place to start, I think. Mm-hmm. 2000, Almost Famous.
Oh. Ah, that was one of my honorable mentions, yeah.
This movie... Okay, so when this movie came out, I had just... Well, so, I mean, if you're not familiar with the movie, Patrick Fugit plays the main character, and he's like a wunderkind who writes for like Cream magazine and is friends with Lester Bangs. And he gets a gig from Rolling Stone to go on tour with them as like an embedded reporter. And he's 16 years old.
Rolling Stone?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And with Ben Fong Torres, he hires him. Mm. And I was 16. I had just tested out of high school early. And I had just got my car. And this was the first movie I drove myself to see. Like after I had seen it with my family, I went back later in the week and saw it again by myself. And I don't know, like, it was just a weird sort of kismet thing where it's, like, about the 16-year-old who's testing out of school and going off into the world on his own for the first time. And I just really, really identified with it. And the whole, the Lester Banks character and the whole take on music. And, I mean, from the beginning when Zooey Deschanel tells him, or leaves him the note, like, listen to Sparks, well, and stare into this candle, and you'll see your future. And I don't know, it was just a perfect time. Like it was a perfect movie for me.
Nice.
I love the theatrical version, not the director's cut.
Okay. I like both. They're both cool.
I just thought like the theatrical was perfect for me.
Yeah.
As it was.
I actually only seen the theatrical one once when I saw it in theaters, and then I've never seen the. I've only had the bootleg.
I don't think I've seen the. I don't know what the differences are, so I don't know if I have seen the director's cut.
Yeah. So, and you were 16, you said?
I was 16.
Nice. It was like your first taste of independence as the film was also his
yes.
first taste of independence.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Did you go home and write?
I did.
Did you go back and read it and you're like, oh, this is horrible. What was I thinking?
I haven't gone back to read it.
Go home and listen to Take Off Your Pants and Jacket and write a really in-depth piece about it. Yeah.
No, not so much. No, that was not my jam.
You're from San Diego, though, so maybe No Doubt or.
I mean, I probably went home and listened to the Almost Famous soundtrack.
Yeah, it was a good choice.
My first pick. This is why I brought up. I was really really young. But I remember. So my dad is like my stepdad. But not really, because he married my mom when I was 3. But that's how we kind of bonded. Like, in its early memories, I remember, like, going to see, like, my first movie with him. Like, my first movie theater experience was with him. Do you know what I mean? So, a lot of the movies that I know from theater as a kid were him. And I remember, like, the first, like, movie that I could really, really kind of remember from beginning to end. And it's Bloodsport. Like, that's why, like, I love Bloodsport. And it was the first movie where...
It's a good choice.
Because, I mean, I remember movies, watching movies, like, when I was, like, 4 and 5, but just little bits and pieces, and then from rewatching them. But the clearest memory I have of a full movie and, like, being like, oh, I know exactly what, and like rewatching it on VHS and going like, I know what's happening next. Okay, cool. This is a cool fight. Or like, oh, I could go to the bathroom now because this is the boring part. was Bloodsport. Like, it was just like, that was the way we kind of bonded and we got along very well. And, you know, like that was our thing. And Bloodsport was the first movie that again, I could remember from beginning to end. And
how old were you?
I think by that time I was 7. So it's the first movie. I mean, I remember other movies but I remember like bits and pieces and stuff. It's more, the earlier memories I have are more like because something else happened. Like I remember Commando. I watched Commando in theaters and I was really upset because I dropped my hot dog and I yelled, I dropped my hot dog really loud. My dad was like, shut up. Get your other one right now. But yeah, that it was traumatic because I really wanted that hot dog.
And yeah,
I contemplated just putting it back on the bun and then just eating it, but I'm like, no.
A movie theater floor.
I was like, no, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, it's the best movie theater treat because it takes you about 3 seconds to eat.
Oh yeah,
you have another hour and 58 minutes.
Yeah, and sometimes it comes out fast because they're horrible. But yeah, so that's my first pick from 1988, and I was about 7. And yeah,
Bloodsport is 1988.
Yeah, yeah.
In my head, it was so much earlier than that.
Me too. I thought it was earlier, but then going back, I'm like, oh yeah, because I that's like I said, like it's the first one where like I watched it the first time, and you know how when you go back to school on Monday or something, and that's another thing about my dad is, well, my mom too. Whenever we would go to the movies, there was nothing that was off limits. Maybe things that were explicitly like sexual. But besides that, like, there's nothing, they would let me watch whatever I wanted to. I would, like, pick movies and they'd be okay with it. And this was the first movie where I went back to school. I could tell the story of the movie from beginning to end. So you're like, dude, you gotta go back. You gotta go see this movie called Bloodsport.
And everyone else's parents is like, don't hang out with Ricardo.
Yeah, don't hang out with him. That's cool. His parents.
It's not on my list, but similar to that was when Showgirls was out.
Oh.
I was probably 16 at the time, and my dad wanted to go see it. And it was when I was hanging out with him, and yeah. I was like, I can't. He's like, what? Like, it's NC-17. Like, I can't actually go to the movie.
Yeah.
Like, even with a parent there. Like, it's even without parental consent.
Yeah.
So I was like that.
Ugh. Yeah. So you were...
Really wanted to take me to Showgirls.
You put your rules on yourself, then. You're like, no, I can't go.
No, NC-17, a parent cannot take someone that's under 17.
Yeah, but who's going to card you? Who's going to card, like, hey, you're...
Well, 16. I know, but that's the other part of me when I was a kid. And yeah, I didn't want to get in trouble.
Right.
When I was a kid, I feel like my dad would kind of let me go anywhere I wanted to, like, especially if it was with friends. Like, he'd be like, I'd be like, oh, I'm going to go to the movies. And then he's like, all right, as long as somebody drops you off and picks you up, you can go anywhere, you know? And we get dropped off at the movie theater, you know, and they come back 2 hours later, whatever. And we would go, I remember going to see, like, True Lies, and then going, oh, can we get 2 for True Lies? And they're like, are you guys 17? It's like, no. It's like, then you guys, it's rated R, kids can't get it. And then we like, just step back and be like, okay, what movie's starting around the same time? Can we get 2 for Lion King, please? It was a lot of that. And clearly she knew, like, these guys are going to sneak in. But it's like, as long as I don't sell you the ticket for True Lies, I'm good.
Yeah.
See, the movie theater that we went to got really tricky and started putting half of the movies on one side and half on the other side. Yeah. And they'd have the ticketing booth. So you had to go into the bathroom and find a movie on the same side of the movie that you wanted to go to.
Yeah, theaters in my town did that too.
That was very hardcore.
No. My friend and I went with my mom to go see... We were going to go see Barbed Wire.
Yeah.
And she was going to go see something else.
Yeah.
And she had to buy our tickets for the other thing. And then we had to sneak into Barbed Wire. We had to leave that theater and then go to Barbed Wire.
Nice.
That's funny.
Which is... It was not worth it.
Well, you do get to see your
Barbed Wire was not worth it. No, you don't.
Well, the credit sequence... maybe I saw the unrated version.
There's nothing. There's nothing in it.
I've seen it. I've seen it with a bunch of boobies in it.
Not Pamela Anderson's.
Dude, I'm telling you, there's an unrated version of it.
Okay, maybe later on they had an unrated version, but in the theatrical version, no Pamela Anderson boobs.
Really? That's really disappointing.
Yeah, she was in Playboy. What the hell?
I know. If I would have seen that in theaters, I would have been so upset.
I did.
Would have thrown stuff at the and screen.
Not only that, it was one of the worst things that exists.
It's pretty terrible.
Like, it has no redeeming value. It's not even fun bad, like, fair game or something.
Or like Showgirls. It's fun
bad. Yeah, Showgirls is fun bad.
Yeah. But yeah, barbed wire is not fun at all.
No, not... No. Showgirls at least has Kyle MacLachlan.
Yeah. Yeah. Jenny, what's your next pick?
All right, so speaking of sneaking into movies, I started sneaking into movies probably around middle school. I feel like I was a late bloomer, but I was like Brandon where I got really nervous I was going to get in trouble, so I didn't start sneaking into R-rated movies until middle school. And the one that I remember, like I don't really remember what my first one was, but what I feel like it was, I was meeting a boy.
Ooh.
It was eighth grade. And so it was like...
Was it a secret?
It was like a...
Was it a secret?
I don't... I feel like my mom had to have known, unless I was told I was meeting a friend. So she just dropped me off.
This is right at the time where going out starts to actually mean something.
Yeah, this was like one of the very first like
when you're in
real
elementary
dates.
Sixth grade, like, yeah, we're going out, even though...
Yeah, and you just pass notes.
Yeah.
And that's it. You just pass notes.
Hold hands.
Hold hands. And, yeah. No kissing. Yeah, not in sixth grade.
Yeah.
No, yeah, this was like one of the first like... legit dates, because you start going to like parties with parents when parents weren't there, like in eighth grade, so it wasn't that big of a deal if you went out to a movie.
Yeah,
you started going to parties in eighth grade.
Yeah, no like booze or anything. Oh, not until ninth grade. Booze was ninth grade.
Even ninth
grade. I was turning 16. Come on.
She's a popular girl.
It was Georgia.
She got invited to all the parties.
So anyways,
you never got invited to parties.
No, I got invited to parties. I would just always be too scared the cops would come.
Yeah, really? I got really nervous too sometimes. So I would not always go.
So I would never do anything because I was always afraid. Well, also, the cops always did come.
Really?
Like, it wasn't a paranoid fantasy. It was they would always come.
Yeah, especially if they're in, like, because I live in Podunk. I mean, not Podunk, but they have, like, friggin'...
A city called Podunk?
Podunk.
Somewhere.
Like, subdivisions that have like unfinished areas, and so people used to have parties in the cul-de-sac.
Sure.
Like idiots. A cul-de-sac has no exit.
Yeah.
There's one way. Really?
Yeah.
And so those always got busted.
Well, you can go into the woods.
Yeah, that's the only way you could go, but you had to leave the cars.
Yeah.
Well, but
you get someone else to drive you, then it's someone else's car that they leave.
Yeah, exactly.
Or leave the car a couple blocks away.
Exactly.
Okay,
so my next movie, the movie I remember sneaking into the very first time was Jackass the movie.
Oh.
So that's sneak into Jackass.
I had
to
sneak
movie.
Into Jackass. Wow. I was 14 when it came out. So I was 8th grade.
You forgot how old Jenny is?
I forgot how old I am.
Okay.
That was 2002, if that's helpful.
Wow, that was 2002.
It was like right before my 15th birthday, and you turned 15 in 8th grade.
I did not have to sneak into it, but I did have to be talked into going. And I didn't regret it. I was like, oh, I'm glad you talked into going.
Yeah, I really
don't like that you had to be talked into going, but I like that you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was sophomore year of college.
Well, okay, high school only lasts 4 years, guys.
I know.
Remember that. So it's not weird that I was in middle school and you guys were in college. That's
I'm not
weird.
Thinking about how young you are. I'm still focused on me.
Here. Oh, okay. All right, fine. Think
theme.
About yourself.
That is the theme of this episode. Yes.
It's
me.
All about him.
I have the right to think about
guys,
myself, and
it.
I feel very old at the moment.
And I feel very young, okay? So this is about me.
Well, that's
and
good. If it were me, that'd be
young.
Good.
2002 sounds like it feels like a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
Okay.
So you went to see Jackass with a boy?
I think a boy and his friend.
Oh.
Two boys. And I remember their names, Austin and Sam.
Oh. We still
I was
them?
Dating Austin. I think Sam actually just asked me to be his friend on Facebook.
Really?
I feel like. Austin, I don't know if we're friends on Facebook. Austin, we went to different high schools. Because in middle school, both high schools went to the same school. And then then we split off at high school. And so you sometimes stayed friends with people at the other high school. And sometimes you didn't. That's kind of how it went.
That's weird. I just got a friend request like a week ago from a girl I knew in high school.
Oh, really? Yeah. I've been getting a couple of those recently. It's that time. People are like, need to find all
mean?
My high school friends. I don't know. Everyone feels like they're getting old or something.
That's true. Probably.
I did the same thing, though. One of my old friends from elementary school just got Facebook, and I was like, oh, my God, hey, be my friend.
To be fair, I think it was someone that I had looked for before but couldn't find her.
Oh, okay.
And then I was like, oh, there you are.
I never go on quests to look at find people.
Really?
Yeah, and also if someone friends me, And I know them from, like, and I'm not good friends with them. I'll friend them to be nice, and then, like, a couple weeks later, I'll unfriend them. Because I don't...
Really?
Yeah.
I love seeing what people are up to.
Me too.
Yeah. I get... I know it's wrong, but I feel like I understand what their life is.
Yeah.
Like, it's really voyeuristic for me.
Really?
Yeah, but I love it. Yeah.
I'm like, I know what you went through now.
Yeah.
I know your whole life story.
And I'll look at people who are, like, talking to them online or whatever, and I'm like, I bet you didn't even know them when I did.
Oh, whoa.
I bet I know them better, like even though I've never seen them for 15 years.
Yeah. I knew their parents. Do you know their parents? Yeah.
You guys are way more into Facebook than I am.
I know. I get into a wormhole really quickly. I try to not do that anymore, but when that friend from elementary school got in there, I was like, oh my God, let me look at all his shit, and then his sister's shit, and then all of their shit, and so I got into this big wormhole.
I'm going through this phase on Facebook where there's too many people posting positive stuff, and I feel like, well, I will admit that, like...
That is 100% not true also.
Yeah. Well, you don't have some of the same friends I have.
That's true.
I have a lot of, like, actor friends. And they're always like, stay positive and like...
Well, they have to, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And my thing is like, I think if you're going to be an artist, like, you have to let the bad in with the good. You know, like, let the sad feelings... It's only going
to... I don't think they need to talk about them, though.
Yeah, or don't talk about the good stuff. And it just bugs me. I don't know why.
So pick one, is what you're saying?
Gets me angry.
So either be negative or...
No, I just don't... I don't give a shit about you being happy.
Show us both. Write a rant. Ricardo wants you all to write rants on your Facebook about how something upset you.
Yeah. Then we know, like, oh.
At least we know you're human.
The worst thing in the world.
Some people, if they hear that, I just don't want to deal with that. The fallout of that. What? Some people writing
ranting.
Rants.
Yeah. I know.
Well, because they're not entertaining.
Well, and whenever I do that, I feel bad immediately. If I say a statement that's like a knock or an insult or in any way like negative, like 30 seconds later, it's a sentence. Like, it's a 4-word sentence. And I immediately feel bad. I'm like, why'd I do that?
Here's the thing.
That's stupid.
Something's bugging
me. Why am I doing anything?
Yeah. Here's the thing is sometimes you experience things in like just life and then you write like a little rant on Facebook or whatever. And certain people think it's to them and it's not. It's literally not to them. My new thing is I go on a rant and then I go, you know who you are. Exclamation point. Just to fuck with everybody. Because everybody in your thing will be like, even if that's not going on in their life at all, they'll think, oh, he's talking about me.
Here's the thing, though. I bet you are talking about them.
No, I'm not.
I would argue, if you showed me an example, I bet I could relate it precisely to someone you know and had interacted with like sometime in the previous week.
Yeah.
Because that's just how things are. You get the idea because you see someone doing a thing.
Well, here's the thing.
And then you're like, oh, I hate that. Let me tell everyone.
Here's my thing. Here's the thing I hate right now, and a lot of people are doing it. Well, two things. One, I hate when people post... like quotes on,
first of all,
Instagram.
If we go down the list of shit you hate, we're gonna be here a long time.
Or people I hate as well. I hate that people post like quotes on Instagram. It's like, this is your fucking photos. This isn't a quote-a-gram.
I can
stop
agree
posting
with that.
Your
I don't
shit.
Like words on my Instagram.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if it's like a nice photo in in courier font.
No. Like, no, I want
a nice shadow.
No, or the
just a picture.
The e-cards. I hate that too. Stop posting your photos.
Oh, those are annoying as hell. Those are annoying as hell.
Wait, on Instagram or in general?
On Instagram. Okay, I don't care. In general.
Oh,
on
e-cards
Facebook,
are hilarious.
They're hilarious.
They're great.
Just don't.
Oh, see, now you're covering yourself because you know he does it.
No.
I'm gonna say right now.
I do.
I hate
it was Instagram.
I like e-cards.
They just get the right ones get me.
It gets to be too much.
Well, I mean, the ones that are stupid, yes. The ones that are about like chicks and wine.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that's enough, you know?
Yeah.
I'll meet you halfway. The ones that are stupid, I don't like.
See? The funny ones.
And here's my other thing. People will post inspirational quotes on Facebook or anything. And I realize that there's two types of people on Facebook or on Twitter or anywhere. There are people who post quotes of how they want to live their lives, and there are people who just live their lives that way and they don't have to fucking post quotes.
Well, but that's the whole point.
I guess so. I don't need that. I don't need fucking quotes.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I posted quotes.
I've never heard you post quotes.
Heard him?
You know who I'm talking about.
You know who you are.
You know who you are. But anyway, where were we? Your pick?
Oh, is it me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just did Jackass.
Sorry.
It's
gonna be that type of episode.
okay, so almost famous is like this. There are movies you see at certain points that you kind of latch onto and idolize the people in it. Like the music that's in it you listen to, the way that people dress you're into,
yeah.
Like the lines from the movie you quote endlessly, especially when you're adolescents, like 14 to 16. And so this is, and it's also an example of things you look back on and are like, ugh, part of that was bad. The movie was great, but part of that lifestyle was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
And for me, that would be 1996 Swingers.
Shut up! I have that! That's my pick, dude!
Yeah, because it's a generational thing, and we're part of the same generation. Yeah. Yeah. So
I was literally just going to look it up because I was like, I think I'm going to talk about that, or I'm going to switch. Literally. I'm...
Yeah. So, yeah, it quoted endlessly, you know, your money. We said money for 7 years after that movie came out. Probably yeah, still
I'm,
do
I'm
occasionally.
I'm going to go on record. I do not recall ever saying money, but I would make the Vegas joke. Vegas, baby, Vegas. Anytime
Vegas,
I went to Vegas.
Everyone says
everyone,
Vegas, baby,
Vegas, Vegas, baby, Vegas.
I'm pretty sure they say it like in The Hangover. Yeah. Like whenever anyone's talking about Vegas, they say Vegas, baby.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the big winner. You always double down on a two-card. Like all that shit. And I was watching, it is funny, I was watching.
You're like this bear with these claws.
You're a fucking bear, man.
And you have this bunny, and you don't know how to fucking kill it with the fangs and the claws.
Yeah. And I was watching some clips from it earlier today, and I haven't seen it in, most of the stuff on this list I haven't seen in over 10 years. And it is still just as good. When Jon Favreau is dancing with Heather Graham to Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, and it cuts every once in a while to Vince Vaughn, and the other guy in Vince Vaughn is like crying watching him. It's amazing. And Vince Vaughn, like, this is going to sound really bad, but like you watch Swingers and he looks sick in Swingers.
He does.
You know, judging from the past,
very gaunt.
10 years of Vince Vaughn. Yeah. When he was, you know, when he was thin, but that's neither here nor there anyway. But the thing, like I look back on like that whole swing music revival of like the late 90s was a weird thing. That was a weird thing to happen.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I was into it. I listened to swing. I slicked my hair back for a time. In sixth grade, I wore a vest every day.
So when was this
silk vest?
Really?
Wow!
Yes. Every
silk
single
vest
day
to school.
Sixth grade, every single day.
That's a bold statement.
It is a bold statement.
That's very classy.
Yeah.
Oh shit!
It's what goes with it.
I had a vest phase too. Suede though. Suede vest.
Silk and suede.
Could
have been a sweet BBC series duo.
So how old did you say you were around this time?
I mean, like 14 to 16.
Okay.
You know, like that was the time like that it hit and it was the thing like among my group of friends. Because it's aspirational.
You cut it
with women, you know?
Oh, yeah. Did you catch it on VHS? I mean, or DVD? Or was it theater?
I'm pretty sure I saw it at the theater first. Okay. Yeah.
See, I caught it late on VHS and it was right after I was out of high school. So... like, it was still popular and stuff, but I was coming at it a little late, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But also, I was coming in at the right time of my, where we were actually going to parties and, like, hanging out in Hollywood and like, going to all the places, like, Swinger, what is it called?
The Dresden?
The Dresden, yeah. And, like, also, like, having that friend who couldn't get over a girlfriend and he was always pining. And I also had the friend, he would always do this. And no matter what party you went to, no matter what bar you were at, it could be sold out, packed, a line around the corner, and he'd be like, let's get out of here. It's dead anyway. He would always say
anyway,
that.
Man.
Yeah, he would always say that. Or he would say, like, if you didn't show up to a party, he'd be like, dude, you missed out a good party. And every time, coincidentally, every time you went to a party, like, it wasn't cool.
Yeah.
But then when you like, were sick or just didn't come out, like, you're like, he'd be like, oh, you missed out. It was a great, great party, man. Coincidence? I don't think so. So, my next pick was actually, I'm going to make a tie out of it.
Yeah.
Because, but yeah, it's totally like quoted that movie for like 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, I still do without even thinking about it.
Yeah.
It's so good. It is really good. And that scene where he's calling her and leaving the messages is still one of the best scenes in any movie I've ever seen. As far as evoking like a pure like cringe. When you're watching, like, it is so painful. And I don't know if that's only because, like, I've been there or
everybody
actually is that affecting, but...
Here's the thing. I explore that, too. especially that moment. I know you haven't seen this movie, right, Jenny?
Swingers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no. You haven't seen Swingers?
There's a moment where he gets a girl's number from a bar.
Movie night.
And that night, everyone tells him, oh, wait a day, wait a 2 days. Like, everyone has their theory of how many days you wait until you call, you know? And that was when nobody had, like, cell phones or anything. Like, you just literally had to call somebody, and hopefully they were home. But he calls her as soon as he gets home. He calls and leaves a message on her answering machine. And then he isn't able to finish his message. So he calls again, and then he calls again, and he calls again. And he has this really long conversation with her. And it goes everywhere. Like, he's excited about it. Then he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I don't want you to think, like, I'm a stalker or whatever. And at the end, she answers the phone, and she says, I've been here all along. Lose my fucking number, basically.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. And...
But it is so... Like, the way he played, he's amazing in it. Yeah. It's really well written. Like, it's well done.
Yeah.
I think it's all... No, it's not one shot, because it cuts to the voicemail. But it's a long shot for a while.
Yeah. And the thing is that... It's so pointing, I think, to guys, because if you haven't done it, you've thought about doing it. And you know that feeling where you're like, oh, if I just had another shot at leaving a message, it'd be much better. But also, before, you didn't have that ability to re-record your message.
Right.
But now you can. Technology. Anyway, so that's your pick, Swingers.
It is?
You're so money.
So it's not your pick, too?
It is mine, too, but it's a tie.
Okay.
Yeah. So, what is your pick?
Okay. So, this is the... Okay. I don't even know where to start with this. I'm just going to say 1997. Another movie that I've had on my list before. Chasing Amy.
Ooh.
This was the first Kevin Smith movie I ever saw. I saw it on accident. We had pay-per-view.
As most of us see Kevin Smith movies.
We had pay-per-view, and my aunt gave me a list of movies she wanted me to record for her. And this was one of the movies. And so I recorded it for her, and I watched it. And I remember when she gave me the tape back, she's like, I can't believe you watched that movie. I'm like, oh, I fucking love this. Well, I didn't say fuck to my aunt. I loved it so much. And it was... The reason it's like a seminal film for me is because it introduced me to Kevin Smith. And he, love him or hate him, he made me want to make movies. And like, if I don't know, I mean, I probably would have got to that same point eventually, but in 1997, or I guess 98, it would have been whatever year it was on pay-per-view. And I saw it, I was like, all right, that it was like the spark.
Yeah.
And I went back and I watched Clerks and I watched Mallrats, and they were just in heavy rotation. And I remember like going to see Dogma the opening night. And like having to have my friend's aunt buy us tickets, and it was like at the fancy new theater, and it was like a big deal. And me and my best friend went and saw Dogma, and it was like the first Kevin Smith movie we saw in theaters. So it was almost a tie, but Chasing Amy is like the one that started everything.
Nice.
And I mean, say what you about Kevin Smith, I'm just thankful that it kind of planted that seed of wanting to make movies. And like I started writing my first screenplay after I saw Chasing Amy.
And also, it's funny that you mentioned this and on this podcast. It's so funny that, because originally when I may have not approached you first about this podcast.
I did. So we're going to do a prequel to the podcast. Yes, yeah. I heard about the podcast
about this
secondhand. Podcast. Yes. Yeah. I was told about it secondhand. Like, oh, hey, would you be interested in doing this? Ricardo wants to do this podcast with us. Would you be interested in doing it? I'm like, yeah, sure. And that person's not here.
You were talking to a recruiter.
Yes, I was.
A gentleman with
a headhunter.
Would you like to do this podcast?
I see. You like movies. Would you be interested in doing a podcast?
Yeah. And he was really serious. And it's funny because, well, if you've seen Kevin Smith more than once, you know that he repeats himself. If you've seen one Q&A, you've seen them all. And this was like maybe like the third time I'd seen him. It was like maybe like a Comic-Con thing. And he was talking about how for him, like Slacker was the movie that kind of got him into making movies. Like he saw it and said, oh, if this qualifies as a movie, then fuck it, I'm going to make movies.
Yep.
And that's
the classic half slam, half compliment.
Yeah. Yeah. The CompuSult. And he was saying how he's like that. He's like, if you see my movies and you say, hey, if this idiot can make a movie, I can make a movie. He's like, then that's good. It inspires you no matter what you get. And I remember hearing him talk about like starting a podcast at the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, shit, you could talk about anything on a podcast? And he's like, yeah. And it's like, fuck it. Like, that really kind of inspired me to kind of be like, oh, well, then if we can talk about movies, then we should do a podcast.
Yeah.
So, very cool. Very cool.
It's really good. It's only a movie that, in retrospect, like, as far as who I am now versus then, do I find issues with, like, gender politics in the movie and, like, some of the, homosexual stuff and things like that. Like, part of the main plot is that he turns her straight, that sort of thing. But, like, but the movie itself, I know it's more complicated than that, but it is really well written. Jason Lee is amazing. Mm-hmm. I remember this is one of the movies that my mom never really cared about stuff I saw, despite, like, the Batman story. That was just when she was more careful. But when I got older, she really didn't give a shit. But I remember my friends and I were watching it, and she walked in on the scene with them in the bar where Jason Lee is like interrogating her about being a lesbian.
Yeah.
And like, she was more just like, what if the other parents found out they were watching this? And she was like, maybe don't watch it. So she turned it off.
Wow. Right when it was getting good.
Yeah. Right when it was getting good.
Yeah.
But it's really great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would say it's his best.
I'd say Dogma. Mm-hmm. Dogma.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't expect that.
Well, I'm a Catholic. I was raised Catholic, so.
Oh, okay.
I feel like me and him have the same problems, but it pushed him towards religion, and it pushed me away.
I would only battle it out with Clerks or Clerks 2.
I still think Chasing Amy's my favorite.
Yeah. Here's the thing about Chasing Amy and him turning her straight is that I know I know two people that that's happened to. And one of those people was me. Like, not that I turned somebody straight, but I was dating...
Someone turned you straight.
No.
You said it wasn't the other way, so it has to be the other
way. I don't know. Okay, yeah, it was that way. But I don't know if she was full gay, you know what I mean? Or if she was full, like, oh, I like girls, and then, oh, I'll date you.
Well,
or if she
I don't think it counts dabbled. As turning her straight, though, because, I mean, in the movie, she does say that she had, like, open that door because she didn't want to limit the possibility, but whatever.
It's also not a binary. Sexuality is fluid. So all those arguments are
Well, yeah. Well, here's I'll tell the story. There's a girl I was dating, like, I don't know, like out of high school. And we dated for on and off for a while. And then I remember the last time I was like, oh, I think it's getting serious or I don't know where it's going. And I remember her going like, yeah, I don't think, it's getting serious. And I'm like, oh, okay, why? And she's like, because I think I like girls better. And I remember thinking that, like, fucking with me, like, I turned her against guys.
Not that you turned her, but you made her realize the grass is greener. Yeah, on the
side. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm an asshole. Oh, well. And then that just pushed me more towards being an asshole. But anyway.
I think Dogma is my favorite, but Dogma was the first Kevin Smith movie I saw.
Oh, really?
I think, yeah. I think I saw Mallrats when I was a lot younger, but I didn't know it was Kevin Smith at the time.
It was weird for me seeing Chasing Amy first, and then like because the whole it's so self-referential to the VSQ universe, and then like going back and then watching that stuff, and then finally coming back to Chasing Amy, I'm like, oh, that's what they were all talking about.
Yeah, because Chasing Amy's third movie.
It's Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy. And then especially like going back to Mallrats, it's such a weird tonal shift.
Yeah, definitely. So different. Yeah.
But also another movie that I had in heavy rotation.
Nice. Yeah. That's
a good one. It's a figment of your fucking imagination. That's what it is.
Mine was kind of a two-way tie with Swingers and the next coming-of-age movie. So listen, hear me out before you start laughing. For my next pick, I'll explain why I put it on my list. I'm kind of the same age as the two main actors in it.
Like Water for Chocolate?
Close. You're very close.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's Chocolat. It's specifically for the end. for the end scene specifically. I think I was either almost out of high school or I was out of high school when this movie came out. But it's Y Tu Mamá También. And it's for like a couple reasons.
Yeah,
one,
tell us something.
No. I never had a gay experience with my best friend.
But you did masturbate next to him on a diving board.
Not at all. Here we go. It's a last scene where they see each other after not seeing each other for a couple of like months, and then they have like they have coffee with each other, and even the voiceover is like, I knew that was the last time I was going to see this person, and for me that's how high school was. Like there's no one that I went to high school with that I still talk to. Like, really? No one. Besides my cousin. Because my cousin, when I was...
That's family, right?
Yeah, with family, I talked to him. But I was a freshman when he was a senior. But besides him, maybe there's one guy, but not really. Like,
I don't really either. I mean, yeah. Again, I'm friends with him on Facebook, yeah, but that's it.
And
I don't really see any of them or talk to them.
And I don't know if you guys had that moment where you guys were like, I had that moment where I was literally at a diner. And even at the diner, I was like, fuck, this is the fucking scene from Ethan Watanabe, the last scene. Like, I knew, like, having that dinner with them, that I was like, this is the last time I'm going to see them. Because it was after graduation. I'm like, I had nothing in common with these people. Like, even when I was in high school, I knew I had nothing in common with the friends that I had in high school.
So you feel like you were a complete outsider in high school?
Not outsider, because I knew everyone, yet wasn't really, like, I knew the football players, I knew the cool kids, I knew the nerds, I knew everybody, but it really didn't identify with any group.
That's kind of how I feel, too.
There wasn't the drama kids that I liked. I always found something I hated about every fucking group.
Well, I wouldn't go that far for me.
Now we're getting to what the issue is.
So to me, it was like, oh, there's no one who kind of wants to... Because I always kind of had that thing where it was like, oh, I want to tell stories. And, like, whether it's writer or director, I always had that in my head that, like... And no one there was like... Oh, that's kind of my bag too. I love movies too. Everybody who loves movies loves them in the surface, and
But you don't have to relate to people just about movies.
No, but just in general, like people had different priorities than I did, and it wasn't
arts versus other.
Yeah, and even when it came to like just the way they approached like dating or something, like it was very like that's not how I view the world at all. Like, it's interesting. And also, second of all, the other reason I put this movie is I think like maybe like a year after I graduated high school, I went to, well, as a kid I would get sent to, my mom thought I'd get in trouble if I stayed here during my summer breaks, so I'd always get sent to Mexico. My grandparents retired, my mom's parents retired to Mexico, and they, you know, over there at the time, even still now, their money was worth, their American dollar was worth, you know, a ton of pesos over there. So they had a ton of money, and my grandfather had a really good job, and he had a really good pension. And I would get sent over there. But the thing is, they sent me over there to keep me in line, but that I got really bad over there. Like, it was worse, because I learned how to smoke over there when I was, like, 14. It was just the worst. The first time I got really drunk, I was, like, 16. And it was horrible, but I had that road trip experience with a couple cousins of mine where we like literally got in a car and it was a much safer back then, and we literally just went driving on the coast of Mexico, and so that's why another reason I put it. It was a really cool experience, and I don't think I could have that again because of how like bad Mexico is and stuff. Like it's a good memory of. How safe it used to be, I guess, or something, and how, you know, how the great experiences I had on that road trip, mostly getting drunk, smoking cigarettes, trying to catch the ladies. But anyway, I didn't have a good experience.
I think I said on the Swarone podcast when I saw it, it was with my girlfriend at the frog in the throat. It was with my girlfriend at the time and my best friend. Who she had dated before.
Wow.
Like one of my best friends.
Was there no eye contact for the next couple hours?
Well, the last 15 minutes was like, ugh. Okay. It was a moment where I could tell we were all feeling the same discomfort. Like no one may have been thinking the same thing, but we were all uneasy for the same reason.
But you think also because... You were like, oh, I want to make sure it's clear that I'm no way interested in this.
No, I mean, it's not like I brought him to this movie like, hey, you guys will really love this. Stay for the end. Stay for the end. Yeah. Then we'll hang out and do something afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So anyway, that's my pick. So Jenny.
All right. So my next one is definitely on the sad side.
Uh-oh.
And I think it fits in really well with the melodramatic teenager phase that most girls had, if not most teenagers in general. And when I saw it, I think it really helped me rethink some things. And not in a... that's going to sound bad once I say the title. The movie is Virgin Suicides, and I don't mean rethinking killing myself, but I mean rethinking, like, being so sad for no reason kind of thing, but, like, wanting to spend time with people that are, you know, important to you, and, it, the you know, any moment could be the last kind of thing like that, but, yeah, and it's a really good movie, too, so I watched it, like, nonstop during that.
Some dark themes in that movie.
Yeah, during that time period of my life, it fit very well.
Were you going through, like, heartbreak?
I mean, a little bit of everything.
Was it more like teenage depression kind of
thing? Yeah, but not, like, clinically depressed. Not, like...
just, like, bummed out
a yeah, little bit. Just, like, in my mind, I was like, this is the worst. Life sucks. Da-da-da, you know?
Okay. And, but... and the way you view life as... a young person.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, now looking back, it was all silly, obviously.
Yeah.
I like literally wrote on my fingernails, life sucks on my fingernails.
L-I-F-E.
Because that's how, and I, yeah, and I used to dye like my tips purple on my hair. Like I had just black eyeliner.
See, it's, you know,
and like
so
baggy
funny?
Black pants.
Is I'm kind of obsessed. Like,
oh, and my ball necklace, my metallic ball necklace.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That was the kicker.
You were dark.
I know. It's
crazy. Like we would have hung out in high school.
Here, it's funny. I'm obsessively into this topic, into this theme because, and I feel like even like stories I write or anything, whether it's a short story or a script or whatever, they always like deal with like sadness because I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I don't know what depression is. I don't know what like being bummed out is. Like every time like I didn't get something or like, hey, I didn't get this job or this thing, it's always a challenge for me. Meaning it's always turned into like, fuck you, I'll show you. I'll do it. I'll get it done. Like it turns into more like anger than it does like sadness. Like, oh, I didn't get this, or man, that girl got away. It's more like, fuck it, I'm angry. I'm going to make it happen. Like, meaning, like, I could shift my sadness into maybe anger and, like this is going to sound really, really, really horrible. But just follow me.
I want to know.
I really relate to Daniel Plainview when he says, I have a challenge in me. Like, that speech he gives, fucking relate to it immensely. And
that
and,
might not bode well for you.
No, I'm just saying... Take it in the spirit that's in, that I...
That you intended,
that I intended
or that he
that
intended?
I don't know what that is yet.
But yeah. But see, like, I'm... But, like Jenny talking about this movie, like, really kind of... I'm so obsessed with dark themes because I want to explore them because I don't feel like I live them in my life. Like to me, everything is, like, positive. Like okay, if I don't get this now, I'll get it later.
That's why
like,
you post all those positive quotes on Facebook.
Yeah, God,
and I don't post quotes.
Which I've been meaning to tell you. I'm a little, like, it's gotten a bit much.
I'm sorry, guys.
The only thing I'll say is that depression is not just being bummed out.
No, yeah. In the way someone who hasn't experienced it first sees it, that's how you first see it. But then when you really like learn about it, I understand what depression is, but just any sort of like that type of feeling, I'm always kind of curious about. I always like if somebody will open up to me about like them being depressed, I'd love to listen. I like to see like fuck, like how do you get out of that? Like
this is going in a whole other weird way.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, so that's an interesting idea. So okay, here's, and this will relate to a later thing that I'll talk about, but. If there was a way, since you feel like you've never felt that, and so as someone who has, you know, been diagnosed with depression before or whatever, like it's for me, like mostly the rational side of you knows what the thing is, but you have no ability at all to, use that rational side.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't, you make sense, but you cannot utilize it at all.
Yeah. And it's not a thing that I'm proud of, like, because I'm afraid like that one day I'm going to have a breakdown.
Right. But what I'm saying is, what if there was a drug that for like other people, like, you know, a thing, people want to take drugs because, you know, it gets you fucking high. It's great.
Yeah.
But for you, you could just get depressed for like 4 hours.
I would probably try.
Sounds like a terrible drug.
Oh, I would try it.
That's really nerve-wracking.
No, it sounds terrible. Well, there are drugs that will do that as an after effect, but but
most antidepressants can cause depression.
Really?
Well, yeah. Also, the come down from ecstasy can be really bad for some people.
Ooh.
But but if there is, but for you, that would be an escape into the thing that you are fascinated by.
Yeah.
Whereas drugs for other people are an escape into the other thing that they're fascinated by, which is just like the opening of the mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, well, chemists, get on that.
Here's the thing. Also, like, whenever I've had a sad experience, like I was really close to, like, my grandparents, like, especially my grandmother, my mom's mom, amazingly close. I'd go visit, you know, she kind of raised me as a young child because, I mean, I was at her house all the time. And then when they moved, like I said, to Mexico, I saw her all the time. And she was, like, she was literally, like, my mom as well, like an extension of my mother. And when she passed away, like, everyone was kind of bummed out and stuff. And I wasn't. I was like, fuck, she had a good life. Like, cool. I got to see her before the cancer took her. I got to say goodbye when she still knew who I was. And to me, it was like, I always saw the positive things. And I never had that moment where I was like, fuck, dude, I'm sad that she's gone. Like, even now, like, when I remember, I'm like, oh, man, I miss her. But it's never like, oh, I'm sad that she... No, it's like, fuck, I miss her, but, oh, man, it was cool. I love the memories I have of her.
That's good. That's healthy.
Yeah, but is it really?
Yeah, it is. No, it is very healthy.
All right.
Because it's true.
Okay.
Was she, like, 50?
My grandmother?
Yeah.
No, she was old.
How old was she?
She was, like, late 70s.
Yeah, that's a good run.
Yeah.
It's fine to be happy about that.
Yeah, all right. Okay. No, I'm saying, like, I feel like there's... That I'm scared that I don't feel that way, because... What if there's something wrong with me?
You're scared because you don't get depressed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a fun thing.
No.
Be happy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Be happy that you don't not get happy.
But what if one day I have a breakdown or something because of that?
Well, you probably will, but not because of that.
Yeah, you won't. I don't think you can have a breakdown because you don't get depressed. Like, I've never heard of anyone like, oh,
yeah,
I'm just too happy.
That's arguing that the natural state of everybody is some kind of depression, where, like, that's just going to snap you back into it, and you're going to lose all the shit you were building up because you couldn't access that.
I guess
thing
so.
That you, for everyone else.
You do not have a chemical imbalance that makes you happy. I have a chemical imbalance that makes me sad.
Right.
I have a chemical imbalance that makes me love food and...
That's not a chemical imbalance.
That's just science.
Just gluttony.
Because science. Yeah.
You're just a glutton.
Fed assery. Yeah.
Food's just good. No, it's just tasty.
It is a chemical imbalance of all the delicious things that hit your tongue.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, Jenny, so how did you get past that like part of your life?
Oh, that's right, the virgin suicide.
Oh yeah.
We went on a weird tangent.
Sorry, guys.
You know, I don't know. I feel like it was one of those phases that I had that I just was like, this, everything is the worst. I probably went through a lot of like stupid shit at that time, like a breakup and like friends not talking to me or something like that. And you know, it's really, it's funny that you say that you don't, because I feel like it's hard almost sometimes to feel the other, like,
happy?
Like, yeah, not in a bad way. Like, but sometimes you're like, I don't understand why I don't feel happy right now. You know?
Like, I have everything, but I'm not satisfied.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was best illustrated by the Zoloft commercial with the little cloud that's just over your head all the time.
Yeah. It's just raining.
You can't really, it's raining. You can't really get out from under that cloud.
You mean that Warner Brothers Zoloft commercial?
Is it a Warner Brothers commercial?
Yeah.
It just reminds me of Looney Tunes.
Okay. Yeah.
That guy.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like that with a cloud over your head. Can't get away
exactly.
From it.
But does it kind of like, is it, does it even feel worse because you're like, you could feel it, like you could step outside yourself and be like, oh fuck, I have a good life, why am I fucking bummed out right now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it's worse.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Knowing that you're depressed and you shouldn't be depressed is probably one of the worst feelings in the world. It's like, I have no reason, like, because like there's a whole combination. It's like a feedback loop of like, I live in America, and I'm well-to-do, and I have a job, and I have a place to live, and I have a roof over my head, and I shouldn't be sad for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now I'm sad about the fact that I'm sad for no reason.
Yeah.
It's a big circle.
It's a conversation with yourself that you never win.
Oh, okay, okay. That's very interesting. Because
that's what I mean by the rational part. The rational part of you is like, well, you can weigh the pros and cons. You can bring to a logical conclusion. But then you're like, yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, like it's funny how you mentioned like my point that I make always. Like sometimes I'm like, fuck, I'm like, there's people my age that like own like really nice houses and like have really nice cars and shit. And, you know, like, I'm here trying to make a fucking movie. And like, how is it childish? But then I go, fuck it. I have a pretty decent life. I live in America.
Yeah.
like
a number one
period. Yeah. I'm not making fucking bricks, you know, like, and you know, in the middle of the fucking desert. Like I'm not.
We're sitting in this room talking about movies that we love. Right. Yeah. We've had how many hours and hours and hours of our lives.
We're talking to people who have enough leisure time to listen to bullshit from four assholes about movies and now themselves.
Yeah. And so like, I always see the positive things. Like I was like, fuck it. All right. And let's get to work on that thing that you need to work on. And then that's how easy it is to kind of, but yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm just baffled by this. Sorry.
Sadness is a crazy thing.
This is, and it's also like when like my girlfriend's sad, like it's also like kind of, how do I, you know that scene in Superman where Superman, especially in the Donner movie, where Pa Kent is dead, and like kind of like you're like fuck, like you're like with all this power he has, he can't fucking prevent his dad from having a heart attack. That's how I feel like when my girlfriend's sad, and it's like, fuck, like all these things that I can do and I can't make her happy. Like, meaning there's nothing that would make her happy unless there's nothing to do, basically.
Nope.
I mean, you could slip drugs in her drink or something.
Yeah, but no. Sure. Yeah. And then finally, like a couple of hours later, she's like, okay. Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, okay. That's weird.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Just got to get through it.
All right.
Anyways.
Virgin Suicides.
There it is.
Deep movie.
Good tangent.
Fucking A. Brandon.
Okay, so I started... So this was originally going to be a tie between two movies that it's related to, but I guess really... And I guess it's still the same thing. So as much as Swingers was a time when you like identified... It was an aspirational identification of like who you wanted to be, like things that you know strive for, dress like, whatever... This represents the moment between when I had no responsibility to do anything and the time when I had a lot of responsibility to do stuff. And that would be both the special edition of Star Wars and the release of The Phantom Menace.
Oh, wow.
And I was about to revise it to be Space Jam and The Waterboy.
Whoa.
Because what those two movies are actually more about anticipation than actually watching the thing. Because I didn't like the special editions. It was nice to see them on the big screen. But the stuff they threw in for the sake of throwing it in to justify re-releasing it was kind of bullshit and dumb. And it didn't really work within the movie. They were cut out for a reason.
Are you talking about like the Charm of Distance? Like meaning like the journey to the thing?
Yeah.
Because
now what I'm thinking about is what was even better was going to see... I saw Space Jam twice.
Yeah.
Only because they played the trailer for the special edition. Before it.
Oh.
So, and this was before time you could just go download the thing.
So your picks are actually Star Wars.
Yeah, it's actually going to be Star Wars Special Edition and Phantom Menace, a tie between the two. Okay. And then Phantom Menace, I saw The Waterboy twice, which I hated The Waterboy. But I saw it twice because it had the trailer for The Phantom Menace before it both times. And when I would go, I'd be like, oh, I might as well watch the movie. I'm here.
Yeah.
But, like, the special edition, I waited in line to go get tickets. My dad brought me out of school for the day to go hang out in line. And, God, it was so stupid. Back when people would wait in line, they would be buying tickets. So you had to wait, like, starting at 4 in the morning or something.
I remember that.
And then people would be buying tickets for, like, the 7 p.m. on, like, Friday or Saturday show.
I remember that.
No one was buying a ticket for the first show on that day.
Yeah.
So my dad had to go and cut in line to be like, sir, any tickets for the 11 o'clock this morning show? I'm like, oh, yeah. And he bought the tickets. We went and saw the movie to like a half-empty theater because everyone was buying tickets for the Friday and Saturday shows.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Even though you went on a Friday morning?
Yeah, we had to go on the Friday. We went really early Friday morning when the special edition was coming out. And the first
and they
show,
were all going Friday night.
They were all going that night.
Why?
And then Saturday night.
I remember that.
But though. No one was waiting in line to buy tickets for like the, it was like 11 or noon.
Why
that
is
day.
The reason? If they were already
there.
I have
there, no idea.
A lot of the reasoning I remember at that time was because people didn't want to go during the day. They wanted to go with their friends, and they would buy tickets
right.
for their friends.
Yeah.
And
oh,
so
after
you,
everyone
you,
yeah.
Like
does.
Some poor yeah. sap would get stuck. Like, oh, you're going to wait in line for the rest of us.
And they didn't do midnight showings back then.
No.
Taking it.
Well, no, but that's the thing. For the special edition, I went on the Friday they were being released, and I waited in line for the tickets that morning for the first show of that day.
But they didn't do one the midnight before.
No, not for the special editions. They did for The Phantom Menace.
So you
in fact,
technically went to the first show.
Yes, I did go to the first show. For The Phantom Menace, though, you had to wait in line forever to get tickets. And then later, you had to wait in line because I went to the 3 a.m. show of The Phantom Menace. I bought two tickets for the 3 a.m. and then like 9 a.m. the next day. And I was so pumped for the 3 a.m. I thought I really had fun and enjoyed it. And then I went to the 9 a.m. and I realized it was a crock of shit.
Oh, no.
Well, it's funny, seeing that movie for the first time, it was like, oh, it wasn't good. Maybe they'll get it with the second one.
Like, yeah, well, that was the thinking all the way through, yeah. And then it never happened.
Even with the third one, they're like, well, maybe there's something that's going to happen in between.
But it's like, not only is there no way that you would ever wait in line for stuff like that anymore. Like, yeah. I just wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't have the time, I don't have...
Well, that's the one good thing to come out of it. It's like, all right, well, at least I know better than to wait in line for... Yeah. At midnight for a movie. Yeah.
But there's stuff that I would wait in line for now. Like Winter Soldier, I would wait in line for that.
Yeah,
I have a pretty good idea that
but
that's at
to,
least
you
worth
you just do Arclight.
Well, then
you
I know,
get
that's
set,
the thing. Then you can go see it at midnight. Yeah.
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 That's what I would do.
But they do that now. They didn't do that then.
Yeah. No, it's so much easier now with internet tickets and such.
I know, but it's a little too... I really liked waiting in line for The Phantom Menace especially.
Eh.
Like, but the people were cool. See, and you're someone who goes to Comic-Con. And that's like one, and that is the only, you are doing nothing, you are nothing but surrounded by those people.
Oh, yeah.
Of which you are one. As much as you want to say, I'm just going to, you are one of those people.
No, yeah. But I'm saying like going to see a single movie isn't as fun as like, oh, we're going to be here all day and we're going to hang out with all these people.
It's staying over to watch panels or whatever.
Yeah. It's just fun to just hang out with those people.
But like these people, like they set up a little camp, like the restaurant around the corner from the theater was like bringing in stuff late at night. Oh. And like people were watching. Like the original movies, like on like little TVs they had brought, and people were dressed. There were people. This I was waiting in line for the 3 a.m. show, so the midnight show was the first one, and I was waiting in line for the 3 a.m. And when it came out, guys came out dressed as Qui-Gon Jinn and Darth Maul, and they reenacted the final fight like verbatim, like physically verbatim. To what the final fight was. I don't know how they did it, but they did it in front of everybody.
Wow.
And that was actually impressive. I don't know if they saw it like before, but it was actually kind of impressive because it had only been screened once.
Yeah.
So I don't know how they figured it out, but they did.
You're like, wow, those guys are good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a little sad too, but.
Yeah.
I wasn't in costume. I was just, yeah.
I also don't like wearing costumes.
Yeah, I can see that. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah, I wouldn't be comfortable. Especially once you get into the theater, like, it's like, fuck that.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I don't do, cosplay at Comic-Con. A, it's like, I don't want to be walking around all hot, you know? Like, I run hot all the time.
Yeah, there's 17,000 people.
I'm just sitting here and I'm sweating, right now. Like, literally, I feel like I'm sweating.
Well, yeah, and you're in San Diego in...
In the dead of summer.
Summer, yeah.
And I don't need an extra layers on me or to be uncomfortable sitting down for, like, you know, 8 hours straight. So, I'm good. I'm good on that. Or if I'm going to dress up, I'm going to dress up as normal guy going to Comic-Con.
Or Lilu. Then you don't have any clothes.
Hey, maybe I'll dress up as that.
I don't think I want to see Ricardo as Lilu.
Fat Lilu?
No, fat Lilu. No fat bearded Lilu.
Yeah, sorry.
But I guess that was, if I could sum it up, that would be the last time I remember like working for a movie.
Like it took work to be out there.
Yeah.
To
see it when I wanted to see it, I actually had to do something.
That was the last time?
Yeah, 1999. Yeah, everything after that was Fandango. You could buy tickets online. Like it wasn't.
I was not an early adopter.
It was like
for Fandango.
It was like Ticketron.
I was still waiting. I was still like, well, I mean, again, I was a lazy friend, so I would meet my friend who waited in line to get the tickets.
See, that's why.
Okay,
because you didn't have
so
to
you
work
didn't
for
work
it.
At all.
Yeah.
I would still go wait in line for the movie all day.
No,
I'm sorry, I had a job.
Hey,
I don't know what to tell you.
You're not a true believer.
I didn't
like doing internet tickets because of the fee for the longest time.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
So I always would go to this. Even if I was going to see the movie, like the midnight showing later on, I'd go buy the tickets at the actual theater and then go back later.
Yeah.
I'd leave and then go back.
Yeah.
Just because I was a big cheapskate and didn't like the fee. It's like, I'm not paying an extra dollar. That's silly.
It is. I stand by that.
So then Star Wars, Phantom
Thank
Menace.
Thank God for AMC and the original Stubbs. Trilogy.
And the special editions.
Okay.
But do you remember, sorry, the last thing, do you remember the trailer for the special editions?
I don't remember that.
When it was like, the trailer started and it was the tiny box on the screen, like with the,
I remember.
With like the fight, like the X-Wing fight
and then,
stuff.
And then the TIE Fighter bursts out of it.
Yeah, the TIE Fighter bursts out and it blows up onto the big screen. That was also the first trailer I went to the theater to see it, but that was the first one I was able to download, I remember.
After like 2.5 hours of waiting for it to...
Yeah, exactly. My 32.6 baud motor.
14.4, dude.
Yeah.
It was slow. It took forever to download that.
14.4,
like
28.8. Yeah.
Looked like shit. But I was so excited.
So good.
Wait, no, actually, okay, hold on. No, the first trailer I remember... Wait, what year was...
1997 was a special edition.
Okay, when was Independence Day? Because that was a fucking pain in the ass.
I think that was 1997, wasn't it?
Sure.
I think so.
I don't remember.
Doesn't matter.
Second beer's worth
it. Sure.
If you had a device to figure this thing
that
out.
That one. Yeah, like in my hand, if I was holding something that was connected to the internet that I could just look down at, but that's too much effort.
Yeah.
I remember that one took forever to download, too.
Yeah. That was a good trailer, too, though.
That was a really good trailer.
Yeah. Movielist.net.com? Can't remember which one. It's still around, though.
Yeah. So it's to you, I think?
It is to me. I feel like I should talk about Independence Day or something big now, but I'm gonna go a different way.
Go.
I'm gonna go with 1950s Rashomon.
Ooh.
Which was
going deep.
The first I'm sure I've talked about it at some point. I don't know if I actually had it on a list, like in the top five, but it was the first foreign film that I remember like seeing in a theater and like being just blown away. I wanna say it was the first foreign movie I ever saw was Rashomon. 99.9% sure it was the first foreign movie I saw.
Really?
And yeah, because it was right after I had tested out of high school, and I took a film class. I was like, wait, I can get credit for watching movies? That's awesome. And this was the first foreign movie that we watched, and I loved it. I loved it so, so much. Like, I just, like, I remember it so vividly. Like, there's just the one shot when they find the body in the bushes, and like you just see the shot through its hands, and I don't know what it was about that shot, but I loved it, and I was just sold on that movie, and like I think I went out the next day and rented it to watch it again. Whoa. And it turned me on to foreign cinema, and so that's why it's important to me.
That might be the first foreign movie I ever saw as well. I remember I was at camp and I took like a film class, and we would edit using a dual deck VCR.
Okay.
And he showed us Rashomon.
That's.
And was talking to us about editing.
That's pretty.
And cool. I can't think of anything before that that I had seen. The only other thing that came up was Man Bites Dog, but that had to be much later.
The first foreign thing I saw was like Jean-Luc Godard. Or was it probably Breathless or like Band of Outsiders?
You're such a bummer high school student. Of course it was.
Yeah.
But to like, I felt like spoiled because I actually got to see it. It wasn't like a big theater, but I got to see it in like a theater projected. It was
That's
awesome.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That still might be one of the best Simpsons quotes.
What?
Was the episode when they're going to Japan.
Oh.
And Marge is like, Homer, you love Japan. Remember you liked Rashomon? That's not how I remember it.
Now, did that kind of inspire you to go out and rent other like foreign films?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because it was like, so it was the perfect storm of like being in a college film class and having my car and having freedom and having a Blockbuster card.
Oh, so you're in college already?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was a college class. It was a weird time because like, oh yay, I'm 16 and I'm in college classes, but it was just like high school. I was like, I was trying to get away from this, and it's more of the same thing, except now they have ashtrays here.
Yeah. you couldn't smoke.
I couldn't smoke yet, no. Yeah. Not that I would have wanted to.
Yeah. You never smoked? You never got into it?
Not really. like I have smoked before, but I would never classify myself as a smoker.
Oh, I fucking love smoking. I loved
cigarettes? I was way into
I did for about 4 or 5 years heavily.
10 years.
I was way into cigars and hookah for a while.
Yeah.
Before we
one of those guys.
Before we were old enough to drink.
Some Al Capones.
Yeah. No. Like the little cigarellos.
Yeah, the Al Capones.
No, they weren't. We went to this place where they rolled their own cigars. Because before we were old enough to drink, there was this hookah bar and cigar shop downtown San Diego that was open to like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. Okay. And so you're there and you can only drink coffee and sodas for so long. If you're like, well, the hookah what they're right there. We might as well try them. And so we all got hooked on hookah and cigars.
Jenny, well, as far as I've known you, I've never seen you ever smoke a cigarette. Were you ever into smoking as a teenager or anything like that? You could say, yeah. I mean, if you weren't, I mean, now you're not, you know, you're not a smoker.
Yeah, I was really, I hung with the wrong crowd in high school.
And you smoke cigarettes?
Yeah.
In college too or no?
I did the college when I'm drunk and need to go out and be in public. Yeah. You know, the social smoking?
Yeah.
I did that.
Yeah. I think everybody kind of dabbles in smoking once or twice.
Yeah, it's great. Life.
Yeah, I
never needed to buy my own pack of cigarettes, though. I could always get them off some guy. I will state that. I never spent any money
moocher.
On cigarettes.
You're the moocher.
No, I wasn't a moocher. I gave that them is, plenty of stuff in that, return.
Whoa.
I'm just kidding.
I love smoking. I used to love smoking. Like, it was just a great joy. After like a good dinner, like a good cigarette.
The best.
Yeah.
After like 2 or 3 beers, the best thing ever.
Yeah. It's funny. I stopped smoking when I started dating my girlfriend that I've been with for a long time. And I stopped doing it. I tapered off when like we started first going out because I'm like, well, you don't ever, you know, ever want to be with somebody up like close, you know, having conversation and like smelling like cigarette. So I wouldn't do it when I would go out with her and hang out with her. And then it came up like, you know, the third time we hung out, it came up like, oh, yeah, she wasn't into cigarettes. And I'm like, damn it. And then when we started dating, when we started kind of going out a lot and it was getting serious, like I told her, like, I smoke cigarettes, but I'm trying to like quit. And then she's like, well, what are you doing? I'm like, my plan is to just cold turkey it. Like just, you know, and then it was around that time I gained a ton of weight around that time.
That happens.
I gained a ton of weight and then I was smoking, I was chewing gum like crazy, like. I must have gotten a lot of cavities.
Not nicotine.
No, just regular chewing gum. But it was, I remember it was bad. It was really, really bad for a while. And to this day, there's not a day that goes by where I don't want a cigarette.
See, and I've, since I've quit, I've had a couple off and on.
Yeah.
But they're gross. Like, it is not the reaction. Like, in my mind, I'm like, oh, that looks delicious, what you're having right now.
Yeah.
Can I have a little bit of that? And I'll have one. And my throat gets gross and like scratchy and it's bad. It hurts.
Yeah, I would smoke if I could, but I don't. Cigars, I'll still do it once in a while, but I don't want to get used to it, you know, because it's the same fucking thing basically.
Yeah.
I smoked a cigar when we were in Jamaica just because it was a Cuban. I'm like, well, I'm here and it's Cuban, so I'm gonna try it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, all right, well, whatever.
Yeah,
it wasn't amazing. Yeah, I wasn't like blown away. I was like, okay, well, I've smoked a Cuban cigar now.
Yeah,
I'm done.
Yeah. So yours was Rashomon then.
Rashomon.
Nice. My next pick is the movie that kind of going from like watching movies for entertainment to watching movies to be like, oh shit, this is like a piece of art, you know?
This for me, is important.
Yeah, this is important.
This means something.
Yeah, to me, it's going to sound maybe pretentious. I'm going to just go out and say it. Badlands. Terrence Malick, Badlands.
I mean, I figured you were going to have a Terrence Malick there at some
there
point.
There was something that was very still, very contemplative, very...
Yeah, and it was the first time where you're like, oh, crap, like, this isn't just entertainment. Like, this is just, like a song or, like, a painting or... And I saw this kind of younger and thinking... I remember thinking that, like, oh, like, having that realization, like, oh, crap, I never... I was a kid. I never saw it that way as an art form. I always saw it as entertainment and not an art form. And I think that was like the movie that was like, I was like kind of obsessed with for a long time just because it was like, yeah, it was still and stuff, but it's like, oh, you could do so much more. And then like the voiceover that it had, like, oh wow. Like really, like I mean, I had seen it in Goodfellas and stuff, but it was really like, oh, crap. Like, you could really do these interesting things with the way you tell a story or how you tell it, or the things, the stillness in it. And, like, it just really well done. And I was, like, obsessed with it for a long time. That was my love for Terrence Malick started then. Jenny?
All right. So, for my next one, this movie helped me find my love of music, and I think when I saw it, which was probably, it had to have been middle school, or maybe early high school, kind of like into the male psyche a little bit, learn more about, because I always like was friends with guys more than girls growing up. And so I always thought I knew guys really well. Like, I knew their mindset. I'm kind of a dude a little bit in the mind.
What do you mean? How do you mean?
I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah.
I think it's my next one too.
We'll be the judge of this.
I mean, there's definitely obviously girly things about me, but in a relationship, I kind of almost...
You're the dude.
The dude side of the relationship for some reason. I just pick girly guys. I guess
I'll agree with that 100%.
See, okay.
Yeah.
So, I think even
not knowing, like, only knowing maybe like three of your four friends, I could guarantee, like, I could see
most
exactly.
Of them,
I wasn't sure where you're going with it, and then you explain it, and yes, I agree.
It's not too insulting, so no. I'll agree with you.
Yeah. No. And I mean, like, even like her mentality of like. And I only say this because I feel like I know you well enough to say this. Like her mentality isn't like she would say, oh, this dude's fucking being really clingy. What's up with that? You know, like, she'd be
clingy.
The type of girl who would say that. Yeah.
Yeah. I hate that.
Yeah.
So I think this movie kind of, I mean, I kind of relate to it in a way, in that way too, just from that perspective. But I love this movie. I used to watch it all the time, and it's High Fidelity.
Oh. Yep. You knew?
Oh, really?
You knew?
That's
my number two.
Oh, wow.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I love this movie.
I think even beyond that, part of the reason, I mean, just the fact that we're sitting here
making
doing
lists.
This podcast, making lists is why it's on my list.
Yeah.
Because, like, I just wholeheartedly identify with it. And beyond the music, movies, like, it's just that fanaticism. It's the combination of the fanaticism of being a fanboy for music and movies, and just the weird relationship craziness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, yeah, it's,
I mean,
it's,
I can't,
a perfect pop culture.
Yes, agree.
Representation of relationships.
Right.
And like, and how we kind of filter everything through what we like and what we
love. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. It's what that means to everyone.
Right.
Like, however hollow generally it is for your meaning, like, actually in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the whole, like, you think a relationship ended one way, and then it actually was completely different than, you know, like, going back and rethinking them.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
it's that whole thing.
I'm fascinated with the idea of going back and talking to people. And just
me
being
too.
Like, just like straight up one-on-one, like, so what, I mean, what happened? Like, we're far enough removed from everything. Like,
yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, you can, like, be honest with,
like,
me.
Like, yeah, be honest. Like, what was I, like, let me tell you what I thought you were, like, in that scenario. Like, I've thought about doing that so many times with people.
I know.
Just because I feel like every relationship is a little bit of a dangling thread.
I just
which
feel like
this movie so well captures.
Yeah.
Anytime that happens, I feel like 2 minutes into it, they're going to be like, you're high fideling me, aren't you?
Yeah.
Like, you're pulling a Rob.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so funny that you see, oh, even like heartbreak, you see it with time, you see it in a different light, you know? Like, meaning something that happened to you in high school, like you, someone breaking up with you or cheating or something, like getting older and stuff, and you're like, oh, that was nothing. Why was I sweating that? Like, that was so stupid. Like, why did
I thought getting back at him was, you're not going to go to prom with me. That was my, like, aha.
You're like, fuck you.
Yeah. I'm going to go with my girlfriends.
Yeah.
And that'll show you.
Just dance.
Yeah.
I just want to dance with my lady friends.
Just dance it out.
But yeah, and the perspective of, like, oh man, like, I sure burned a lot of calories hitting that person.
Yeah.
For no reason at all.
Yeah.
And you're better off now.
Yeah.
Like, that's the funny thing.
Better off dead.
Yes.
Right. But it's not even about better off. It's just that, like, that, for better or worse, that experience informed who you are.
Yes.
Like, that's a thing you went through that is somewhat, you know, related to kind of the general human condition or whatever that you are now a part of, so you can move on from it.
This is exactly what why I don't... When people post, like, really positive things, I'm like... I see a lot of, especially this one girl on Facebook. She's always like, oh, don't be negative because you're subconscious, and she's really hippie, and I don't like that.
You're
and I'm like,
too close. You're getting too close.
Sorry, and you know who you are. but the notion of like that's part of what's going to be your makeup as a human being. You know, like these experiences you're having, this heartbreak. Go for it. Adam needs to go use the bathroom. Let's not be quiet about it. Yeah. having that context of like, I'm older now and stuff like that. You're like, oh, this is how I grew from that experience. You know, I grew from that experience.
No, it's true. Like there are moments that I can look back on that are those moments of like, where I was the asshole in terms of I was the put upon person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know. It's like, that's just another thing that happened.
Yeah. And just the fact that you're like, oh, well, I'm not that you're glad that it happened, but you after a while, you're like, oh, well, I'm glad I had that experience because now I've grown from it. And like, hey, I'm not going to make that mistake again. And it's good that I had it that young. It's kind of like for me, like I tried a lot of drugs in high school, but I'm glad because I don't have that curiosity as an adult. Like I can go to a party and someone could be doing any drug and I won't be like, fuck, what is that like? I wonder what that's like. I've never done that before. You know, it's like...
Oh, yeah. I could see that.
You know?
I don't.
I've tried that before.
Oh, no, no. I have that feeling. But it's like, I kind of want that.
Oh. Well, it depends on the drug, I guess.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess so. It's another episode.
Yeah.
But no, it's like, because the...
The drug episode.
The reverse of that is that... You are avoiding all of that stuff at all costs, which is not going to happen.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
So you're going to go through all those things just like everyone else does, which is why high fidelity relates to pretty much everybody because everyone's been in a shitty relationship at some point. So part of it at least relates to you somehow, and everyone's going to hit that. You're never going to avoid any of that.
So, okay, so I'll ask a question, and I know the answer because everyone's with somebody right now, you know? Everyone here is like dating someone, so... But... Is there anywhere in the past where you're like, oh, if I could have done that differently, I would have done that differently? For me, I'm glad. I'm
like,
glad.
In the grander sense,
yeah.
Like, no, I made the decisions I made, and that's the path I took, so everything's fine. But, yeah, if, like, I went back to someone and be like, oh, yeah, I would do that differently.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it would affect where I am now.
Yeah.
But I may have had more fun at the time. That's kind of all of them probably are like that.
Yeah.
I just had a weird thought. Like, I'm wondering if any exes listen to the podcast.
No, not me.
I don't think mine do.
Not me at all.
Yeah.
Well, no, like I don't. Oh, you don't think they do, or you don't care.
Don't think they do. But even if they do, that's fine.
I just never thought about it.
I don't care.
That's weird. I don't care. I just...
I don't care if anybody listens. I mean, meaning... I don't care if anybody that I know listens to.
We don't need listeners now.
Yeah, no listeners.
Yeah.
It's for us, guys.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't mind that anybody... I'll ask Jenny, because Jenny's like the one I spend most time with because she's my girlfriend's sister. But do you think I act differently privately than I do publicly?
No.
No?
No, you're an asshole all the time.
Before you said that, I was going to say, to a fault?
You're always an asshole. Yeah.
And I feel like...
You don't
like,
care who you act an asshole around. You and my parents, whatever. I'm just kidding. My dad, whatever. It's no big deal.
Lightly. What?
Just kidding.
I feel like I'm so cool.
The only person you might act differently around is literally my mom. I feel like you might act differently around my mom. Just because you don't want to, like... come off as an asshole in front of her.
I don't say certain jokes, you know?
But I think it's okay if you're an asshole around my dad because my dad makes jokes all the time.
Yeah.
So I think it's fine.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a big deal.
but like, since I am the way I am all the time, I don't... Here's the thing about being an asshole. Here's the thing. I'll justify my light assholeness. Is that I want someone to be... I try to act with people like I want them to act around me. Like, you said some things about me where people are like, oh, I'm a Jenny, I can't believe you said that. And you're like, he would want to know. Like, she said something about like, oh yeah, it's funny how Ricardo has skinny legs. Like, he has a fat torso and skinny legs. And people were like, we had people over and they're like, whoa, can't believe you said that. And he's like, Jenny's like, I don't care. He knows it. He would.
He knows it. That's why he wears shorts. Yeah. He likes his legs.
I don't care. I don't care that my legs are skinny. But like that to me doesn't, like, it's like, oh, I want you to be honest with me, just like I want to be honest with you. So
it's the best policy.
Yeah. He always tells me when he doesn't like my boyfriends.
Or I act very clearly, so it's like sometimes I'm like, oh, I did a really good job of like being a nice person, you know?
Yeah.
And Jenny's like, no, no.
I knew.
I would bet your bar is a little lower than everyone else's.
A little bit. Enough about being an asshole. So, High Fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like sometimes you want to go back and kind of like visit?
The only thing I would want to do is I kind of hope my exes don't listen, but I would hope that, or I'd like to actually end relationships sooner than they were ended.
You drag things out.
I think that's common.
Yeah.
I feel like I would have had a much better high school and college if I hadn't dated a couple people.
You know how they end. So you're like,
it was a waste of time.
So automatically you can say, okay, well, the cutoff point could have been then back here.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple relationships where I don't feel that way, where I'm like, I had a great time the entire time. And even though they ended, I had a really fun time. But there's a couple where it was like, I hung out with him too much. I didn't see my friends, you know, that whole thing. He made a lot of mistakes and I overlooked them, kind of thing, you know? And so it's things like that where it's like,
you let too many things slide.
Yeah. Things like that where they literally just lasted too long.
Yeah.
But there are a couple past relationships where they were great while they were happening. Of course, the breakup might not have been well, but it was probably just like the last month.
I don't think there's ever a good breakup.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. That's like that's the Seinfeld thing, the myth, when he meets Janine Garofalo. And like their breakup is basically like, so you, like at the same time, you're not like, no? Okay. And then she gets up and leaves.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool how people could view that, like how to have that. I think that's a really good indicator of just how much, like, either you're grown up or you're not. Like, the fact that you could be like, oh, yeah, like, your faults, like, oh, man, I should have ended that way sooner. Man, I was really young.
Yeah.
It's really cool. All right, Brandon.
Okay, so my next one is a three-way tie.
Whoa, are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. But they all are kind of around the same thing. So this is pretty much me. I mentioned the drug thing.
Yeah.
But this is pretty much me.
You love drugs.
Between eight. Yeah, drugs are great.
Yeah.
Right, has everyone ever given them a bad review?
No.
Like,
it's true.
Immediately afterwards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
Not like years later when they realized they made a horrible mistake.
Yeah.
But like between like 18, because I didn't, like I said, I didn't do anything in high school. I was always too afraid of the cops. So when I went to college, like that all changed. I was away from everything.
Yeah.
Cops didn't give a shit, so I was ready to whatever experiment. So, like, between the ages of 18 and, like, 22 or 23, I would say the three movies that similarly reflect who I was at the time was Human Traffic from 1999,
mm-hmm.
The British movie, Go, mm-hmm. also from 1999. Or no, Human Traffic was 2000, Go was 1999, and then Groove, which was 1999.
What's Groove?
Groove was an independent movie about the San Francisco rave scene.
Oh, okay.
About the building of a rave and, you know, the party. John Digweed is in it, a DJ. Yeah. All these movies feature a DJ at some point or another making a cameo. But those, like, Human Traffic is about a bunch of kids in Cardiff and like, the late 90s rave scene mm-hmm. there in England. And then, I mean, Go is obviously kind of about the rave scene in America, but also kind of a youthful response to Pulp Fiction in a way, I guess.
Yeah.
And then Groove is just basically an independent. It's not, I don't think it's good. I haven't seen any of these in over 10 years.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Groove is the one that's the least good.
Yeah.
At the time, I loved it, but I'm sure it's the one that's least good. At least Human Traffic has John Sim, who's really good, and it's really funny. And the soundtracks are amazing, but it's all techno, and I was a club kid, and, you know, the way they portray, like, ecstasy and, like, the drug culture at that time was just spot on and, like, super relatable, at least for mm-hmm. someone who was doing it at the time. And so those would be it.
All right.
Interesting. I've never seen any of those movies. I've never seen Go.
You haven't seen Go? Go's
no,
really good.
I wanted to, but I haven't seen it.
Human Traffic's really good. I feel like a lot of people haven't seen Human Traffic, but Human Traffic is good.
I think I've
only seen Go.
Yeah.
I've seen the cover of Groove. I know exactly what you're talking about.
The guy in the subway with the disco ball?
Yeah.
Yeah,
but, I've seen that cover.
But I've never actually seen the movie. But Go, yeah, I've seen a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually Doug Liman, his second movie after Swingers.
Yeah, I was surprised that I was saying two Doug Liman movies.
is
Swingers.
Jumper's next?
Yeah. The Bourne Identity.
Yeah. All right. Adam?
My next one was also High Fidelity.
Oh, okay.
Oh, nice.
All right.
Have you guys read the book? I'm sure you've read the book.
I have read I just had a moral dilemma. We were cleaning out the apartment.
Uh-oh.
And I was getting rid of books. I'm like, do I get rid of High Fidelity? I'm like, no, I can't. I can't. Even if I don't read it again, I can't get rid of it.
I still have a list of all of the bands and songs that as I was reading High Fidelity, I would keep a list. Like as I was going through it of like, okay, I have to listen to this. I have to listen to this.
White Light,
I still
White
have that Stiff Little Fingers.
Can I borrow it?
Yeah.
Cool. I've never read it.
But you don't know how to read.
I don't read. I just look at the pictures. There's pictures, right?
Nope.
One in the front and back. The author? The
mine's pictures. Pictures made of words.
Not the paperback.
Oh.
It is, the language is kind of pictographic in a way.
You're right. I'll just figure it out. I'll just guess what it says. I'll watch the movie and flip through the pages and pretend like I'm reading it.
And feel like you read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just imagine everyone's got an English accent, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For my next pick, I picked 1977's Annie Hall.
Ah,
and, interesting. For two main reasons. One, it's kind of the movie that I feel, especially because I think because I like movies so much and I watch so many movies growing up, but this applies to everybody, really. This applies to people who listen to music, who read books, anything. I feel like this movie is a movie that made me realize, like, oh, fuck. Everything I've read about love is bullshit. Everything I've read about, like relationships and love in movies and stuff, or like the media, is all bullshit. Like, it's like, especially because of the ending, you know, like he doesn't end up with her, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time that it was like such a downer, not a downer ending, but it's like, oh, hey, sometimes you don't end up with a girl.
Yeah.
Like sometimes that's the best.
It's both surreal and realistic at the same time. It's like very realistic and beyond reality.
Yeah.
At the same time where that movie goes with like the narration and like pulling Marshall McLuhan into the scene.
Yeah.
But then like for having those wonderful flights of fantasy that the movie has, it's like a really honest movie about a relationship.
Yeah.
In spite of all the
and
craziness.
Yeah, in spite of all the hyper realistic moments of the movie, like it's really realistic to like relationships.
Yeah.
You know, like kind of in a weird way, this is, some people might find this blasphemous, but in the same way I felt when I saw 500 Days of Summer. Meaning like oh fuck, for all the fantasy stuff that's in the movie, like in its core, like this is a great love story because sometimes you're just with the wrong person. You know what I mean? Like you didn't like it 500 Days of Summer as much.
No, I don't know that I would call it a great love story.
It's meaning because it's a great relationship story,
but it's not a love story because they're not in like
it's a story about love.
It's
a love story. Yes.
Yeah, it's a story about like the way love plays tricks, like
yes.
the illusions that love creates,
yeah.
where it's like you think that this person is the person, but
and it's not.
She's not.
Yeah, yeah. And so, for that main reason, like having the first couple girlfriends you have, you know, like either out of high school,
Jenny
or,
knows.
Yeah,
yeah, knows. Oh yeah, those.
And realizing like, oh man, like that's not how like. Love isn't a fairy tale ending, you know, like it doesn't have that. It's, you know, it's like it's up and down and stuff. Mm-hmm. And watching that movie and like you said, like just realizing like, oh, man, for all the hyper realistic moments this has, like, fuck, like this is how really love is compared to you know, love isn't love isn't a 80s John Cusack movie, you know? Like where you the kid who's kind of not the most popular kid's gonna get the hot chick at the end, you know?
Right.
It doesn't say anything.
Well, it's got the fanciful, surrealistic trappings on the outside, but at its core, it is very truthful about, like, what it's talking about is all the confusion and the weird, like, not knowing and the ups and downs and the back and forths that are actually involved in a real relationship. Like, they're on again, off again.
Yeah.
They, like, it's not just, like, the boy gets girl, boy loses girl, boy yeah. gets girl back. Your boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl. It's more complicated than that.
Yeah, yeah.
There are many more levels that it's operating on. And it is like a weird, the whole revisiting the older relationships, which kind of strikes back to High Fidelity, where it's like, while he's in the relationship with Annie Hall, it's flashing back to his relationships with his previous wives and his previous
yeah.
whatevers.
Yeah. But it's funny, because as much as that informed me about relationships, like, that's not the way. I've had the on and off, on again girlfriend, but I'm like, oh, now older, I'm like, oh, that's not healthy. Like, that's not healthy at all. Like, if you're on and off again, you should be off. Like, no question. Like, well, at least for me. Like, I've been with my girlfriend for like nine years this year, will be. And there's never been a point where it's like, hey, let's take a break. Like, no, it's like, no, like, you know, if there's an issue, let's talk about it.
So you're saying Ross and Rachel shouldn't stay together?
No. No.
Ugh, I have been having that argument a lot.
Right?
They were on a break.
Yeah. Yeah. So
they're the fairy tale. They should be together.
Anyway, Annie Hall was my pick to Jenny.
Okay. Do I need to do a recap?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, while we're on the topic, my last one is actually 500 Days of Summer.
Nice.
Which is pretty much the same exact thing, just making you realize that even the best of times, or when something seems perfect, it's not always perfect kind of thing. I feel like, in the worst way possible, I really related to Summer. Even though she's a super big bitch, I think that at that point when I saw the movie, that was who I was. And so I think it kind of pulled me back and was like, you need to like you need to rethink your life a little bit.
Yeah.
And maybe just try to find love and not, you know, whatever.
Oh, you sound like an ex of mine.
Okay.
Well, that's funny, because 500 Days of Summer, it's funny because they have parallels. Like Annie Hall and 500 Days of Summer, they have a lot in common. Not only because they do have that hyper realism, you know, when he first sleeps with her and he's mm-hmm. having the musical scene, but just because of the fact that you start seeing the markers. As the movie goes on, you're like, oh man, like, whoa. And then rewatching the movie, you're like, fuck. When they're at the bookstore, you're like, you know, she's already met that other guy. Like, if you put things together, you're like, ah, what a bitch. Like, damn it. Like, she was already, you know? And, if you really analyze, or at least for me, I realized, like, oh, I'm a little bit of, I've been a little bit of this person, but also a little bit of Summer's character.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good pick, though.
Yeah. I love that movie, too. It's one of my favorites, for sure. But, yeah. So that's my life in a movie list.
And it's funny, because hearing the Q&A with the writer of that movie, like, he's like, and even the commentary, they're asked them, like, oh, so how much of this movie, you get to ask this a lot, but he's like, how much of this movie is made up? And he literally went, oh, you know that line that says this and that? And he's like, yeah. He's like, oh, I made that up. But everything else, it's moments that I've had with a lot of different relationships into one.
Yeah.
It was really cool. Really well made. And I really dug, did you see, you're going to hate this, but the one with Miles Teller and The Incredible Now? Or
The Spectacular.
I haven't seen it yet.
That, it's the same writer, and I enjoyed it.
I want to see it really.
It was
bad.
Like the high school version.
I would really like it.
Yeah, probably. All right. So you ended with 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah.
Brandon, How are you ending your list, your life list?
It was a toss-up between two things, but I guess I should do the one that's more profound, right?
Sure, whatever. One... It's your list, dude.
If you feel that you must.
Yeah.
Did you have a profound life?
Well, I like to think so.
Okay, well then that one obviously.
I'm probably full of shit, but it's the movie that I always point to as being my favorite movie, but pretty much only because ever since I saw it, like it informs basically everything I look for in a thing. And that would be 1950s Harvey.
Hmm.
It has the darkness, the fantastical, like fairy tale side to it as well. Cause in the end, like they basically confirmed that Harvey is a real thing.
Yeah.
It exists in the world. But everything before that points to the fact that it's a dark tale of a disturbed alcoholic who sees a 6 foot tall rabbit. But it's funny and it has a ton of heart and it has everything I look for in anything I watch.
Nothing? No. I'm trying to process this.
But dark with alcoholism.
Yeah, I mean, that's the dark part. I mean, it's lighthearted in the movie. He goes to the bar and everyone talks to Harvey, but why are they all talking to Harvey? They're all drunks in the bar at 1 in the afternoon in this small town. But Jimmy Stewart sells it. I wouldn't give if I had a time machine. One of the things I would do is go back in time to see him doing the stage production of it.
Oh, he did a stage production.
It was originally a play.
Oh, wow!
And Jimmy Stewart was Elwood Dowd in the play, and that would blow me away.
Yeah,
that would be amazing to see on Broadway. So now you've got fucking what's his name from Big Bang Theory playing Elwood P. Dowd with Sheldon. What's his name?
Oh, really?
Yeah, he played it. They showed a clip.
Jim Parsons,
that's it. Like, if you go to New York and stay in a hotel, you know how they have the channel that has, like, clips of Broadway shows and stuff? Like, I saw one of those of the Harvey with him in it. It was one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Really?
He's playing Sheldon.
He's got such range, though.
Oh, God. I know. It's surprising that he would be so one note.
from Sheldon to Sheldon in 90 seconds.
Yeah, and with none of the sincerity or the heart that Jimmy Stewart... I mean, it's Jimmy Stewart. I mean, what are you going to do? But I can never think of a thing that I love better in a movie than that.
Yeah.
Like, my second and third spot usually switches, like, if I'm ever making a top three. But I can never think of anything that I love better.
All right. Well, but is that why you're picking it? Because that's what you look... That's the things you look into.
Yeah, I mean, because in the end, if we're talking about movies and how they affect your life, I mean, that has everything that I look for in any story. Like a balance of the sweet with the silly and the sad. Like the whole spectrum of experience in the one thing. And especially if you can gloss it up as much as that. Like it's really a lighthearted, you know, thing that has darkness lurking beneath it.
Yeah.
That I really love.
Nice. All right. Well, good way to end your list, Harvey. It's law alcoholism.
It was either that, or can I say the other thing? It was either that or the first movie that ever really scared me.
Rambo?
Rambo. My parents were huge liberals. No, it was Invasion of the Body Snatcher 78.
Oh.
That was the first movie that I can remember, like, giving me nightmares.
Really?
And it was all the dog hobo hybrid. But there's the shot of the thing taking over, like the dog sleeping next to the bum, and so it like mixes the two together, and they parodied it on The Simpsons when Bart gets all the powers to control everything.
Yeah.
But it's the guy with the human face with the tongue hanging out. It is one of the most disturbing effects I have ever seen in the history of movies. So like bad. Still to this day,
it's amazing.
It's amazing, but still to this day, that freaks me the fuck out. But that movie itself, like just the paranoia of everything, like just how. From the very beginning, you know everyone's going to lose.
Yeah.
Like, it will be lost. Like, everyone you're following and care about will lose at the end of the movie. Like, that's terrifying to me. There's just no hope through the entire thing.
Wait, how old were you when you saw it the first time?
Probably like 10 or something.
Okay.
The first thing that really scared me, and in a weird way, you may laugh, but... And I love this movie now. I love it. The original Red Dawn.
Why did that scare you?
Because
scared of Cubans?
Well, first of all, I was scared of invasion. But second of all, I was a kid. But second of all,
they're communists. This is the Red Scare.
Yeah. And I thought, man, I don't have any skills. I don't know how to hunt. I don't know how to fish. Like, I'm fucked. I'm Daryl in this
John
bad Milius thing. You know,
be pissed at you.
I'm what's his name? The guy who ratted them out, the kid from The Outsiders, the Soch. Wyatt? No. What am I thinking?
I don't remember.
I don't remember any of the characters' actual names. I just remember the act. Like
Leif Garrett. I think I thought like, man, I'm Leif Garrett. I'm gonna fucking fold. I'm gonna tell them we're all at, and I'm, you know, they're gonna shoot me. Can't fish or hunt. I was really scared.
Can't drink a deer's blood.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
I did run. Excuse me. I did run out of the theater scared during The Witches.
Oh,
Angelica Houston.
Oh,
the
have
scene,
you seen that, Jenny?
No.
Oh.
The scene where they're in the conference room and they all change into witches.
That's pretty scary.
Is terrifying.
Yeah,
I love that movie. Like,
it is an amazing movie, but it is terrifying.
Also, when they turn him into a mouse.
Well, that's I know that's before that, but and he's watching as a mouse all of them turn into the witches, like in the ballroom of the hotel.
I think it's like the fisheye lens that makes it a little bit scarier.
But it's also like the green smoke and like all their like the makeup effects, like their face grow out and like it is brutal. Ooh. I remember like walking out of the theater and going to the bathroom and my dad finding me there, being like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm okay." And we walked back into the movie after that scene played out, and it was fine. But that scene terrified me.
He's like, "You're missing crucial plot points."
I was 17. That's what we went to see instead of Showgirls.
Adam, what is your last
this,
movie?
The scary talk is a better segue into my next one than Profundity. So, I mean, how can I not end with the movie that scared me? Because I love scary movies. I feel bad though because. Again, true to this is the same. This is the same number one from our first episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's Jaws.
Oh,
bringing it back. because even as a kid, like again, like I was younger than 10 when I would keep putting this movie on all the time. I would always watch Jaws, and I would always have nightmares. But I kept watching it. I kept going back again and again and again.
And you're right by the ocean too.
And it was right by the ocean.
See, I don't. I would be interested to know who got scared by it and how close to the ocean they were.
Well, I was like 10 minutes away from the ocean, maybe, like depending on how fast we were driving. Very close. And Jaws terrified me, but I would always watch it. And I really have no rational reason. Like, I knew I was going to have nightmares as soon as it was.
It's amazing.
It is amazing.
Because you're remembering everything up to them singing the song on the boat. And like, nothing afterwards.
Well, I mean, I guess I always, like, from an early age, I liked being scared because loved that movie. Like, I could watch it all the time.
See, that's interesting to me because I agree. I like being scared in a movie. Like, if something can scare me, I feel like that's an amazing ability.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That they have to make me have an irrational fear of something I know is not real that I'm watching on a thing. Like, bravo, you did it.
Yeah.
Like, I know this is fake and you scared me. So that's really good. But, like, do you enjoy being scared? A lot of people hate it, and I understand why, because it's a terrible feeling.
I mean, I keep watching scary movies. I feel like if I didn't like it, then I wouldn't watch scary movies, which is, like, my sister. She doesn't like being scared. She doesn't watch scary movies, so I have a feeling she doesn't like it.
She doesn't like that
but
feeling.
But I love...
Yeah, no, yeah. Kelly,
I like
my
going
girlfriend,
to,
same way.
I like going to haunted houses, and I like watching scary movies, so I feel like I like it. Which is a weird thing to say.
I do too.
I think it was a while before I realized that I enjoyed being scared.
I'm just so desperate for an emotional reaction.
In my youth, watching it, I was always confused about why I put it on. Because like, I think it took me a while to understand. I was like, oh, I just like scary movies. I don't know why I'm watching this again because I'm going to have nightmares. And like, I'm just sitting there being anxious, like waiting for the dude's head to pop out of the boat. Because I know that's the first thing that's going to scare me. And I know it's coming. And it was still scary every time for such a long time.
So, okay. So you are way into horror. What is the most scared you've ever been watching something?
The most scared I've ever been watching something. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, because it was surprisingly recent and like the most effective scare. Was in Inside.
Really?
Yeah.
Don't spoil it.
I'm not.
I haven't seen it either.
I have it sitting there.
There's a really, really good, like, I was, like, I just wanted to, like, pause it and, like, stand up and clap. I'm like, that was an awesome scare.
Well, but that's, okay, that's different, though. That's, you're impressed by how...
No, but it scared the shit out of me.
Okay.
Like, I was sitting alone in a dark room watching this movie, and I had to, like, pause the movie and turn the lights on.
Whoa.
Yeah.
When I saw the Blair Witch Project in theaters, it was before the official, before the, like, wide release. It was a small independent theater in Denver, and they had made handouts to give to everyone that was walking into the theater, mm-hmm. asking for donations to the victims' families. And I didn't know, this was before like the internet, where like you could kind of find out everything about a thing before it happened. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know really anything about it. I just knew this is a thing that was coming out that was really scary. So my friends and I went and saw it, not knowing what it was. And the theater's handing out these flyers for donations to the victims' families. And then this thing, because, you know, the whole first person, you know, mockumentary kind of thing mm-hmm. never happened before that. And it scared the, we almost threw up in the alley afterwards.
Like, what did they do with donations that people gave?
They didn't take them. They'd be like,
I remember that too. Yeah, they didn't take them.
We're just joking.
No, they would just kind of be like, no.
Well, it would also be like a, it would be a throwaway. So it would be like, you know, go to this site or call this number or something like that. They're just passing out to people to kind of reinforce the reality of it. But I remember during that last sequence of the movie feeling sick and like tense. And the last shot happens of the guy in the corner, and then the movie ends, you know? Mm-hmm. And we just stood in the alleyway, like, feeling nauseous. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember ever being more scared than that in anything.
I don't dislike Blair Witch Project, but I feel like a great deal of the fear of that is from marketing and not from the film itself.
Yeah, I agree. I could agree with that.
Does that matter, though?
No, but...
It does, because that's not filmmaking, that's marketing.
Yeah. Well...
It was marketed so well... that you thought it was real, and since you thought it was real, you wanted to throw up in the alley.
But so
if
the
you didn't know that it was
but
real,
the marketing is just reinforcing what the movie is trying to do. Then,
I but still.
It's reinforcing the reality that it's trying to show.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just all part of the same thing.
Well, here's the thing: it goes together. So I agree with that. A lot of it was the marketing. But I agree with Brandon that's Brandon. Part of it. That's what I said. Sorry.
Brandon.
Did I say Brandon?
Brandon. It was,
sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Brandon.
Yeah. Freudian slip.
So close.
Freudian slip. So I get what he's saying, that's part of it, though. The fact that they did a good job made the movie even scarier.
If you have to have marketing, you might as well reinforce what the movie is trying to do, right?
I mean, I don't know. It's my problem is I didn't see it in the theaters, and by the time I did see it, I knew that it was fake. So,
see, and that happened to so many people. Everyone I knew that had seen it in theaters, like before they knew like what it was, were terrified. But everyone who saw it later, like on home video, weren't like they could appreciate it or whatever, and like found it, you know, scary or whatever.
Yeah, like but, I can enjoy it, but
yeah,
but, I don't. The fear is not film based for me. It's based on marketing. It's entirely based on how they sold it to you.
But I also like wasn't sold at all. Like I went in just hearing that I think it was on Anacool News or something. Like I'd heard that it was a cool thing and like not knowing anything else about it. Like, oh, this thing is really scary.
But they were handing out flyers.
Well, yeah, the theater did that.
Right.
I didn't know if that was organized by, you know, the marketing team or whatever.
It was.
Well, okay. It didn't matter at the time.
But it did.
So
subconsciously.
But it's the same thing.
Because you thought it was real.
But the idea of a haunted house is to try and make you think. The only reason you're going to get scared is when you think you're threatened. Like, you only get scared if you think you're threatened. Like, physiologically, you can't get scared unless you think something's wrong. Right? That's the response. Something's wrong. This is unsettling. I'm scared. So however that happens, it does it really matter?
I mean, I don't know that I can even go along with that. Because, I mean, I'm not threatened by the movie. The movie is fake. I know that it's fake.
So you don't think any of the fright you feel is genuine?
No, I think it's a very different thing. It's a very different kind of fear.
Well... As opposed to being like
this
held,
is a whole
held
other,
up
this
or something.
Like a whole other episode.
That's true. That's a whole other thing.
Yeah. But anyway, for you.
Anyway,
was,
Jaws is really scary.
Jaws was really scary. And I kept watching it even though it scared me. And that, like, the day that I realized that I said, oh, I like scary movies, it was like, oh, thank you, Jaws. So, yeah. And I mean, I think it's fitting. 100th episode, same number one from the first episode.
Yeah.
Nice. For my number one, I guess, my last pick, I feel like the Annie Hall informed me, like, oh, hey, love isn't what you've seen in many media. But then this movie, Punch Drunk Love, my number one, reaffirmed that, hey, no matter how crazy you are, there's someone there for everybody, you know? Like, it was, I remember saying that and being like, oh, man, like, that's such a romantic movie. That
someone
romantic
this
notion.
Fucked up could get someone so fucked up also. Then well, sure. Well,
yeah, and having the thought, like, I remember it was, like, the first, like, really, really adult relationship thought I had about, like, oh, sometimes love isn't, like, love isn't a certain way. Sometimes love is like, hey, it's when I realize, like, hey, everybody's crazy. Like, everybody's crazy in their own fucking way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about, hey, is your brand of crazy going to mash with my brand of crazy? And if it isn't, then, hey, we got something going on now. And that's what the movie, I got out of the movie. Like, oh, wow. Like, you know, he just needed someone to kind of get him. And then she needed someone to get her. And it was, I don't know. It was not only a good lesson, but just such a good film. Like, it was really well done. And
I just rewatched that this weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Really underrated.
Yeah.
I feel like totally. A lot of people would put that as their last, well, it may be justifiably so, but that doesn't make it bad.
Like, no, no.
Like their least favorite Paul Thomas Anderson movie.
No.
In a list of nothing but.
Amazing.
The movies. Best movies ever made.
Yeah. I don't think it's as bad as worst movie.
I don't know about all that, but yeah. Okay.
Well, some of the best movies ever made.
The best movies ever made.
I can think of two others I hate way more than this.
I don't want to know. I don't want to be disappointed. but no, like this movie.
And that's what love is, man.
Yeah. And like seriously.
Wait, I thought
like,
love means never having to say you're sorry.
No, love is what makes you fucked up. That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
Right?
Not really.
Okay.
No, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by that?
I think I was getting called on this. I guess I mean it's not necessarily all the happy-go-lucky things that you love to do through the day-to-day. The majority of life is drudgery.
Yeah,
so how you fit in with the drudgery
is
what makes you compatible.
Yeah. It's like... It's like
that knowing... may not have anything to do with Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah, but... No. To me, it was all Punch Drunk Love was.
But you really put me on the spot.
Not only a great movie, but also like a great like. Oh wow! Like okay, I see this a different way. And I saw it when it first came out in theaters, and I was younger, and like thinking like, oh fuck, like okay. Well, first of all, it's just a great lesson. Like, hey, no matter how fucked up you are, there's someone there for everybody if you look right the right way. But also, secondly, the fact that. That love is that way. Like love is, like you said, it applies to what you said as well. But like, hey, I'm this way. These are my foibles, and can you live your rest of your life with me like that? Dimming, and can I live with the rest of my life with you like that? So, I don't know. And that's a great lesson I think that I learned. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I get it.
So I'm angry.
You're angry. You don't entirely understand depression.
Yeah.
But there's someone for you.
Yeah.
And she's in the other room, and that's good.
Yeah. She's.
It's not good that she's in the other room. It's good that she's for you.
She's making gifts. and on Tumblr, doing some crazy stuff.
It's pronounced GIFs.
I'm with Chris Hardwick on this one.
Yeah,
he
me too.
Was a he was not a linguist. He's a programmer, and he does not get to choose how it's pronounced. It's GIF.
You still made it up.
GIF.
That's great.
GIF
you can pronounce
is
it all you want.
Peanut butter.
That's Jiffy.
GIF.
No, there's GIF. Choosy moms choose GIF.
Jiffy is a cornbread.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Jiffy is a cornbread.
Yeah. Jiffy bread.
Yeah. You're just shooting holes in your own credibility.
I never purported. This is not like.
Yeah, no, nope. You sided. You backed the wrong horse. Backed the wrong horse.
That was not my final draft.
We still need, and I want to continue the
some
horror
bullshit
discussion
I just said 30 seconds ago.
We need to have another horror episode soon, so we can continue talking about fear.
Yeah,
the essence of fear.
And does anybody have any other movies that they wanted to throw out? Jenny, did you have anything? You wanted
I'm okay.
You're okay. All right.
we've been on here long enough.
Yeah,
yeah, we've talked enough. Thanks for listening, and hopefully you got to know us a little better. And you know, shoot us a tweet or an email or however you want to do it.
Let us know if you like us or not.
Yeah, let us know if we're okay. No, let us know if we're chemically imbalanced. No, we want to know.
I know that already.
We want to know.
What, I mean, personally, what I don't know about you guys.
Let us know what your five movies are. You know?
I thought you were going to say what your chemical imbalance was.
Well, that too. Yeah. Let us know what prescription drugs you're taking. And thanks for listening and all the support throughout, you know, these 100 episodes. And like always, if you have any suggestions for topics and such, let us know. Tweet us, email us. We're at The Film Podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Ricardo, ULTRERES.
I'm at Janae, JEHNEIGH.
At BL Bennett, just like it sounds.
Yeah. I'm at Ann Adam Scott, AN_AdamScott.
Yeah. And so again, thank you very much for listening. And if you're going to buy something off Amazon, keep doing us a favor. If you're already doing it, thank you. But if you're not, go to our website at thefilmpodcast.com. And then on the bottom left-hand corner, there's a link to Amazon. Click on that and go about your shopping. And it helps us get, you know, cool microphones or, you know, stuff like that.
If you want to go buy a copy of Jaws or Annie Hall or High Fidelity.
Punch Drunk Love.
Harvey.
500 Days of Summer.
500 Days of Summer.
Yeah. Badlands on Criterion. Just go through our link.
Oh, Criterion.
Yeah. Again, thank you. We really appreciate all the people that are listening and all the feedback we get. I'm always excited when someone like tweets at us and you know, has a question or has a comment like, why didn't you fucking guys mention this movie? It's good. You're passionate about movies, just like us. It's good that you let us know what you like. You know, so thank you. And anything else you guys want to say?
No.
Before we leave? Fuck you guys. Until next time.
Hey, let's end it there.
Until next time, have a good week.